more of it. You know, just like everything else in the Vision Pro, it was a nice sample of something that we might have more of someday. who knows? Like, it was 12 minutes long. Like, okay, that's great. You know, after almost a year, that's okay. I can't wait to see more if it ever comes sometime, maybe, please.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think it's one of those things, like I'd said previously, whether or not you have any interest in submarine films, whether or not you have any interest in short films, I think just as an exploration of a new, or new to me anyway, kind of art, I thought it was really cool. And as with all things Vision Pro, it shows so much potential. We'll see if it's ever really realized. And in a lot of ways, it is realized, because like this 15 or whatever, 12, 15, 17 minute short film is realizing that potential, but I still was left wanting more. I want either more of them or just a longer film of this note. And so I don't want to be down on the Vision Pro, because I think it is such an incredible piece of technology and so incredibly cool. And yet, as we've said ad nauseum since February, you know, we want more. Give us more. You have infinite money, Apple. You don't have infinite time. You know, it takes time to make these things happen, but you have infinite money. Do something, please, please do something. And this is a great example of it. So more, more, please. I'll take seconds and thirds and fourths. I'll take more, please.
And I know this does not fit their sensibilities, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure Apple wants to do everything original and custom for this. And as a result, we have almost nothing. What I would love is just take existing experiences and bring them to us here. You know, similar to what the talk show live did at WBDC this year, where like they had a 3D stream of the talk show that was just like having a front row seat in the theater. It was a fixed camera and a thing was happening on stage in front of it. That was great. Is that the only thing this headset can do? No, of course not. But it does it, and it does it really well. Like, make deals. Give me a front row seat to great theater productions. Give me a front row seat to concerts or sporting events or whatever. Like,
Sporting events would be so amazing. I know that's not your cup of tea, and that's fine.
And
but
sporting events have unique challenges with like live broadcast bandwidth and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, I get that, but concerts and theater productions don't. Like, you like pre-record, make a deal, go pre-record a great performance of some theater and some concerts and just put it on the Vision Pro. Sell it. I mean, people paid almost $4,000 for this thing. You could sell those things for $30 and people will buy them. Like, it trust me, like, just get something on there, because like this show is like just the pure 3D experience of sitting in front of a performance can be really great and really immersive and really compelling for this device. And we already produce events out in the world that, if merely captured from a good perspective with 3D cameras and had nothing else done to them, would make great Vision Pro content. So I hope someone in there, I hope they're at least thinking of it or trying it or laying the groundwork for it. Because in the meantime, while we wait for 12 more minutes of original content to be made, we can get hours and hours of great stuff on there with some, you know, some deals and some fairly simple production.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And to get ahead of feedback, there are some apps, some third-party apps in the Vision Pro. I don't remember what I want to say it's like Access Concerts or something like that. We have so much to talk about. I'll probably forget to go back in the show notes and add it. There are things that exist in the Vision Pro. I've heard a lot of people say that I think it's National Geographic or something like that app also offers maybe not immersive video, but certainly like IMAX sized video. So there are third party ways that you can do some of this stuff, but that doesn't negate what you're saying, Marco. And I agree wholeheartedly. And again, I absolutely concur that theater or equivalent sorts of things would be phenomenal. Like, for those of us who never saw or really didn't pay that much attention to Hamilton up until it was released, I think it was July 4th or thereabouts of 2020, I lost my mind. I mean, you two were front row seats to me losing my mind about Hamilton 5 years after everyone else did. And you bet I would pay, you know, $20, $30, $40 to be able to watch that in an immersive video in the Vision Pro. And I would absolutely kill for that. And sporting events, oh my word, that would be just incredible. And, you know, there's so many ways that people are trying to make sporting events that aren't happening literally in front of you more and more interesting. We've had a handful of people send us links. Again, I'll forget to put it in the show notes, but links to this thing that's kind of in the spirit of the Vegas Sphere, But the idea is it makes you feel like you're sitting in the stands of a sporting event. And then what's presented on the inside of the sphere is the sporting event. You know what I mean? So you've got all these people around you, like that concert, the Phish concert you went to, which makes you feel like you're doing this as a collective group endeavor. And yet you're watching this, not immersive, but like it just all around you. So I guess, quote unquote, immersive, not literally immersive, or maybe vice versa. Who knows? Anyways, you get the idea. So you've got it all around you. And it's my understanding from those who have tried it is that it's truly incredible. And so, yeah, again, I know we're a broken record and I apologize for it. But in the off chance that anyone with, you know, authority at Apple is listening, more, please. It's so incredible. Please give us more. We are so thirsty for more. And I know, again, sports is not really your thing, Marco, but like, it is worth the 4 minutes to watch the NBA All-Star Weekend thing, because I think these are each literally 4 minutes. There's an NBA All-Star thing. There's the Super Bowl thing. Now, granted, these are all coming out months after the fact, but still, they're so cool and it shows so much potential. And I agree wholeheartedly that maybe streaming this is a non-starter, but oh man, even if it was like a few hours delayed, I would really think about delaying watching a sporting event so I could see it in immersive video rather than watching it live. It's that freaking cool. So
yeah, like just don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Like, don't wait until you can have like custom everything, multi-shot, you know, fancy edited, like just a fixed camera in front of a great event. That alone could be extremely compelling. And we are already producing in the world lots of great theater and stage shows and concerts and like magic shows. Like, there's so many things that this could work for. Comedy shows. Like, there's so much out there that this could work for. Anything performed on a stage, basically. Like, you can just put a camera in a really good spot and capture it and sell that, and it would be great. And, you know, but it strikes me that Apple's probably just waiting for like only the really high end content. But like, please, Apple, consider the alternative here. Give us more of regular stuff, because that could be really great.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Any quick thoughts about your hearing test? You said you passed, but
yeah,
that
was fine.
Was there anything else?
Nothing to report.
All right. Very quickly, we have a little bit of housekeeping to achieve and accomplish. First of all, if you are an American, we are recording just barely less than a week before Election Day. We're not going to belabor this, hopefully, but I know I speak for all of us in saying, please go vote if you're an American. And I'm probably speaking for all of us in saying, if you want our opinion about it, we really endorse Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, and generally speaking, the Democratic Party. The Republican Party seems to be intent on being racist and fascist and so on and so forth. You can see the recent Madison Square Garden rally, which was distasteful on a trillion different levels. If that's what you're into, cool, I guess. Not really, but whatever. But if you want people who are looking to govern rather than just do what they need to do to make themselves even more rich, then I strongly encourage you to vote, and specifically to vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz and Democrats across the board, generally speaking, wherever possible. There's, of course, you know, exceptions here and there, but generally speaking, a vote for them is what we encourage. There are issues with all of the candidates. Naturally, we haven't really spoken about what's going on overseas in a long time, but that's really deplorable, what's going on in Gaza. And there's definitely some associations with the current administration, for sure. And that is gross. And I don't want to minimize that. But ultimately, no political candidate is perfect. And for me, anyway, and now I will speak only for myself, for me, I would much rather have a Kamala Harris who has some questionable, very questionable thoughts about Gaza, but seems to at least domestically want what's best for damn near everyone. And I will take that over a man who has mostly lost his marbles, has demonstrated that he's a monster as a president, and his intent and his party are intent on taking away the rights of all of the women in my life. It's just gross top to bottom. I can't endorse that. I can't stand for it. I would love very much for my wife and my daughter to have control over their own bodies. So for me, that means Harrison Walz.
Yeah, I'll be a little more firm about it. Casey was polite about it. So there's a couple of angles here. Number one is, you know, whether you go vote at all. So if you are eligible to vote in the United States, the elections these days are won and lost mostly based on Democratic turnout. Republicans tend to turn out pretty consistently. And, you know, if you're out there and you're like, I think I want to vote for Trump, most likely you are going to go show up. It's the people who are on the left politically, typically, that have much more variable turnout rates. And elections tend to be decided based on how many liberal-leaning people actually get out there and go vote for the Democratic candidate. Now, this system that we have sucks. The voting system we have is horrendous. The party system we have is horrendous. It sucks. But it's the system we have. And if you're an American, you might, as Casey said, like, look, the handling of Israel and Gaza is messed up on so many levels. And I don't know almost any American who fully agrees with everything we've done with our handling of that. And the thing is, though, you only have one choice right now. Your only choice is, do I want Harris or Trump? That's it. That's the only choice you have. You don't have, at this point in the election, there is no option that says, I'm going to send a message, or I'm going to throw my vote away, or I'm going to support some third party candidate, or I just can't support, you know, Harris because I object to it. Because you know what? First of all, if you're concerned about the situation in Gaza, Trump is, by all accounts, by his own words, by every possible analyst, by experts in the subject, by people over there, way worse than Harris. So if you care at all about that situation, or about Ukraine, or about any of the wars that are currently going on in the world, universally, people who know what they're talking about way more than us say Trump is far worse to handle those situations than Harris. So you out there might be thinking, I can't stomach what, you know, the Biden administration and probably Harris are going to choose to do over there. You might think that, and I feel you, but Trump will be far worse. So if you don't vote, odds are you are probably more liberal than average. If you don't vote, what you're saying is, I'm okay with Trump, because that's what will happen. Like, if liberals don't turn out, what will happen is we'll get Trump. So I urge you, even though we never have a perfect selection of candidates at this stage, that's not what this vote is. If in the future, if we have a more diverse political party situation, if we have a different voting system besides first past the post or anything else, if we have other voting dynamics that allow us to make, you know, more nuanced choices, then great. That'll be a great time. And we would love to push for that change to happen. But right now, that's not the option on the table. Right now, the option on the table is you either go vote for Harris or we get Trump. And if you care about any of those issues, I assure you Trump is worse. And honestly, and I know we have some conservative listeners left, and there's not many of you because we've turned many of you away over the years with comments like this. But if you are planning on going to vote for Trump, I tried to understand the Trump voters over the years. Honestly, I don't get it. I would love to know. Actually, you know what? Don't email me. I don't want to hear. I was going to say I'd love to know why, but honestly, I don't want to hear it anymore. But I urge you to consider that almost everyone who actually has worked with him or near him or governed with him or served in his cabinet or commanded the military under his rule, almost all of those people have since come out and said, for the love of God, do not put him back in office. So whatever you think will happen, look at what did happen. What actually happened is, he burned a lot of people. He made a lot of mistakes. A lot of people who have worked with him are now in jail for being criminals. He is also a convicted felon on many, many counts, in addition to all of his other shortcomings. And I he has specifically said that he basically doesn't care about some pretty fundamental things about America, like democracy. Now, in my opinion, anything that undermines democracy is the most un-American thing you can possibly do. If you say you won't trust the results of an election, if you say certain people shouldn't be allowed to vote, if you say, you know, slogans like taking the country back, what that tells me is you don't believe in America. You believe in a dictatorship. And I am not the only person saying this. This is not hyperbole. This is like, look around at people who know what they're talking about, because obviously we don't. But look around at people who know what they're talking about, and they're all saying the same thing. This is not vague. He's not being subtle. He's not hinting. He's directly saying he does not want freedom and democracy. He wants to be the dictator. And what we saw when he was in the office last time is that there's a lot of potential for that, that our system is more fragile than we think. So I strongly urge you, if you consider yourself an American patriot, there is one candidate in this election who is promising and has demonstrated the willpower and ability to undermine the fundamentals of our democracy. And there's another candidate who's pretty decent. I don't care if Harris is not perfect for your politics. Trump is the most anti-American choice you could possibly make. And in my opinion, I know this is going to piss off a lot of people. I don't think you can fly the American flag and call yourself an American patriot if you support a candidate who wants to clearly undermine the fundamentals of our democracy. So that's my point. Please, if you are at all, I know the Trumpists, for you, this is tribal, this is religious. You don't give a crap about anything except your team winning. You know what? Go do whatever you're going to do. The liberals out there, I urge you, everyone else, I urge you, go show up. If you show up and we have good voter turnout, we will crush Trump. It's not even going to be close. But it's all about turnout. We have to turn out. Even if Harris is not perfect for you, she's better than Trump. And that's the only choice we have right now.
Now, it's a little bit late to register to vote if you haven't already. Some states do have same-day registration, though, however. We will put links in the show notes if you're wondering. I would love to vote. I've never done it. I have no idea how. I have no idea what to do. Vote.org, iwillvote.com, vote.gov. All these links will be in the show notes. They will all help you find where you have to vote, what you have to do. Hopefully you either are already registered or have same day registration. And even if you are very knowledgeable and saying none of this applies to me because I don't live in a swing state and all that matters is people who live in a swing state, show up and vote for your local elections, for your state elections. That stuff matters a huge amount, especially as a bulwark against a potential another Trump administration. You want to vote even if you're in a state that, quote unquote, doesn't count. And by the way, what we traditionally think of as swing states, you know, whatever, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, maybe Arizona, right? For all we know, your state could become a swing state either now or in the future. Don't give up. If you're in Texas and think there's no point in me voting, vote. Show up and vote. And again, even if you think it doesn't matter for the presidential election, vote for all your local and state elections. And while you're there, check the Harris checkbox. I think my co-hosts have explained why. It's super duper important. Please let us make the next time we record a podcast not be super sad.
Yeah. And by the
way, for the love of
again,
God.
Going off of the swing state thing, like you might think it's not that important for me to vote. My state always goes super red or super blue. Well, what if this is very close in the popular vote? Now, you know that many times the popular vote has gone to the Democratic candidate, but the Republican candidate has won. That's weird, especially recently, huh? That's unusual. Maybe we should change the system. If it goes the other direction, if it's even close to going the other direction, if the Electoral College votes in a Democrat, but the popular vote is very slightly Republican or even close. And by the way, many votes are going to be thrown away or switched because of all the crazy machinations that have happened since the last election in like election boards and local government and stuff like that. If it's close, they will take it. They will cheat. They will use their crooked judges they've installed over all the years. Like, they will take it. It can't be close. We have to win by a lot for it to actually count. If it is at all close, they will steal it, I assure you. And the system is way more fragile than you think. So it can't be close. For us to win, we have to win by a lot or we won't actually win. So even if you think your vote doesn't matter, I assure you it does. Go out there, please, for the love of God, please vote.
Yep. If you have anyone in your life that you care about that is not a white guy, please, Kamala Harris, Tim Walz. Please, please, please.
Even the white guys. I got news for you. Trump doesn't care about you.
That's true, too.
He doesn't give a shit about you. He doesn't care. I assure you. Anyone who thinks Trump is working for them, I honestly look at what he has actually said and done. People can promise all sorts of stuff when they are campaigning, but if you look at what they actually do, it's usually a much smaller set of things that they've achieved and a smaller set of people they've helped. And you know, unless you are a very, very small group of very rich men, he's not doing anything for you. He doesn't care about you. He cares about himself and making himself richer and keeping himself maybe possibly out of jail. Nothing. He doesn't care about you at all. He says bullshit to convince you. Trump is a paranoid narcissist. It's very easy for anyone who's ever had a paranoid narcissist in their family or their life to identify these traits. They're pretty good at convincing people on a shallow level to kind of be on their team, to fight for them, because they make you feel really good in a certain way for a time. Then they turn on you. And every, again, I assure you, if you haven't had somebody like this in your life, you're very lucky. I unfortunately have. And they can always bring in new supporters. Then eventually they burn them and they have to bring in more. That's why they have to develop the skill to keep bringing in new supporters, because they burn the people who are close to them constantly. That's why you see this guy burning everyone close to him, and why he leaves a trail of imprisoned people and criminals and people behind him who he first holds close and then burns. If you think he's working at all for you, you're being duped. I'm sorry. You're not. He's not working for you at all. I assure you. And if you don't want to believe me, that's fine. You will eventually. And I hope that time comes sooner rather than later. And I'm sorry when that happens to you, because it's not a good feeling. But he's duping everyone who thinks he's supporting them, because he's not. So, you know, get out there, everyone. Please, for the love of God, vote.
We have something happier to talk about, though, and that is that all of us, but really mostly and almost entirely John, have been doing a lot of work to bring back the HP Holiday Store, baby. It's that time. So here we will do the annual reminder that you can go to atp.fm/store. You can pull the car over after signaling. You can get to the side of the sidewalk or do whatever you need to do to go to atp.fm/store or visualize where you're going to. And imagine as you get to your desk at work about how you must go to atp.fm/store because we have quite the array of holiday. Well, they're not really holiday options. They're just options around holidays. But here we are. We have quite the array of things to hopefully entice your whimsy and fancy. John, would you mind taking us through it, please?
I know it's not even Halloween as we record this, and you'd be like, what do you mean holiday store? Everything's getting earlier and earlier. This is intentional. We are trying to continue to increase the chances that if you order something, it will arrive in time for whatever holiday you celebrate. That's why we're starting so early. So, you know, forgive us for jumping the gun a little bit on this, but it is indeed the holiday store. The sale ends on Sunday, November 17th, so that is your deadline. But yeah, just do it now. A reminder, if you are an ATP member, you have a special promo code on your member page, good for 15% off. So please use that. We've tried, as in last year, to make all, if you are logged into ATP.fm, when you go to ATP.fm store, we've tried to incorporate that discount code in all the links so you don't have to even remember to put it in. But what if you're not logged in, or what if something goes wrong? Get your code. It's on your member page. Copy and paste it during the checkout process. 15% off. If you want to become a member to get the discount, you can very easily get a discount big enough to more than account for the cost of your membership. ATP.fm/join. What do we have for sale this year? This is the first holiday season where we actually have ATP gift memberships ready. We had them, rolled them out a little while ago, but we missed the last holiday season. This is the holiday season when they are available. You can give someone else the gift of ATP membership. Maybe you know someone you think might like the show. Maybe you know someone who listens, but they don't care enough about the show to pay for membership themselves. Give them a membership gift. You can buy them just 1 month. You can buy them a year. You can buy them 7 months, unfortunately, by buying them 7 individual one-month memberships. But it'll work. It'll work fine. The system's not perfect. But the whole point is, when you buy a membership gift for anybody, whether they're already a member, have never been a member, doesn't matter, it only just adds to their membership. If you're already a member and someone buys you a gift membership, just redeem it immediately. It will just tack on time to the end of your membership. That's how the system works. If you want someone to buy you a membership, right? Even if you're already a member, but either way, if you want someone to buy you a membership, you don't want to pay for your next year membership, or you never wanted to be a member, but it's a perfect gift idea for you because it's something you wouldn't buy for yourself, but it's a gift idea for somebody else. There is a link that you can give them, both on your member page and on the store page, that will help them. It's just atp.fm/gift, and then a query string that puts your email address in. All it is pre-filling a form with your email, but the email part is important. You can read the fact, because the email address is how you get your membership. It's assigned to your account based on your email address. Anyway, we have the fact linked. We have the, if you're logged in when you go to atp.fm store, you will see the link for someone buying you a gift membership. There you go. That's gift memberships. The system has been exercised pretty well by all the people who have bought gift memberships in non-holiday season, but it is the perfect holiday gift. As for all the rest of the stuff, we have a lineup of M4 shirts, M4, M4 Pro, and M4 Max. We made these shirts before these chips were even announced. We were speculating that they would probably make an M4 Pro and M4 Max based on the rumors, and guess what? They did. So, success! there are no chips on the back of these shirts. It's just the logos on the front. partially because for two-thirds of them, we had no idea what the chips would look like. But in general, we've been avoiding the chips in the back to lower costs and because some people don't like them there. So there you go. You know what the shirts look like if you've seen the M1, 2, or 3 shirts. It's M4, M4 Pro, and M4 Max. There is no M4 Ultra shirt or anything like that because we don't know what they're going to make with that. If they make a really cool M4 Ultra or M4 Extreme, you can bet we'll have shirts. But right now, only shirts for stuff that Apple has announced / shipped. M4, M4 Pro, and M4 Max. In all these things, the new thing that we have is all these shirts are available in t-shirt, sweatshirt, tank top, long sleeve t-shirt. Like we're really trying to make as many varieties as possible. So if you're like, it's the winter, why do I want a t-shirt? Get a sweatshirt, get a long sleeve t-shirt. Many options. Of course, we have the M4 monochrome, which is a cheaper version that doesn't have the rainbow stripes. It just has the all white M4 thing. Same deal. It's variable in t-shirts and sweatshirts and yes, even tank tops, even though it's the winter. Then we have all our ATP logo merch. For the first time, we have added pullover hoodies. They are shown separately on the store page, you know, as opposed to a zip hoodie. This is a pullover hoodie, no zipper. You have to pull it over yourself with the rainbow ATP logo or the white ATP logo. Those are actually just new styles available on those respective shirts. Like the plain old ATP logo shirt is available in t-shirt, long sleeve, sweatshirt, and now pullover hoodie, and same for the other one. But we've showing them separately on the store page, just so you know. So don't get confused by that. ATP Pixels is back. We've only sold this shirt once, and people seem to like it. It's the ATP logo rendered in tiny pixels, which was extremely difficult to figure out how to print, but it seems like the last run of these shirts worked out well, and people like them, so it's back. And guess what? Now it's available in sweatshirt as well. Again, another tricky printing problem, but I saw the proofs of how it came out with our test print, and it seems to look as good as the t-shirts did, so ATP Pixels is back if you want that. And like I said, we've got our plain ATP logo stuff available. We've still got the zip hoodie, if you want the zip hoodie, which is amazing. That is still available with the embroidered rainbow ATP logo on it. The ATP polo is there with the new gray color. ATP mugs are back. It is the cobalt one, the white mug with sort of cobalt blue logo on it. The mugs are the only item on this entire sale that are limited quantity because we had to pre-buy them. So if you want a mug, order now because they may sell out. And when they sell out, that's it. And then finally, we have the ATP hat with the embroidered logo on it. That's all our holiday stuff. Yeah, so there you go. And again, remember those gift certificates. If people say, I never know what to buy you, even if you're only vaguely interested in ATP membership, send them the link. Say, hey, buy me this thing. It's a thing I wouldn't buy for them myself, but it'll be cool to check out the umpteen member specials, all the overtime segments you missed, the bootleg, the ad-free version of the show, all that good stuff.
Yeah, you can listen to us come to the near end of ATP on the most recent tier list.
You wonder what we're talking about with that episode. There's not just one tier list episode. There are many of them. So you could go back in time to the beginning and see how it is.
When we all still liked each other. I kid. But no, seriously, please check out atp.fm/store. Again, up until the very end of November 17th, New York time. So please go ahead and put in your orders. I don't know this for sure. This is just my gut. But I think, generally speaking, Cotton Bureau will ship in roughly the order they receive these things. So you should, you know, get all of these. If you're an American anyway, you should get these comfortably before the Christmas holiday. However, if you were, you know, wanted to be quick on the trigger, so to speak, you might get it a little before everyone else. You could be the first person tooting at us saying, hey, look at my new M4 shirt. And again, to reiterate, new pullover hoodies. The backs of all the M4 shirts are blank, which I was very on board with the chip designs at the beginning. And now I think I'm on team blank back. And so this was both because we didn't know what to put on the back and also because it worked out well. So please check it out. atp.fm/store. All right. As per the rules, even though there wasn't a single keynote, there was enough action going on over the last 3 days that we are skipping follow-up. I have been told by the person in my ear that we need to skip follow-up, and so we are going to jump into the last 3 days of activity. For context, it is almost exactly noon our time on Wednesday the 30th. And we're going to get there in a second. The MacBook Pro announcement just happened less than an hour ago, so when we get to the MacBook Pro stuff, we might be a little off on some of the details. Please give us grace, because this all just happened. But what didn't just happen, or not to the same context, is what happened on Monday. And on Monday, we got a new iMac, several new iMacs even. We've got a ton of new iMacs insofar as there are 7 vibrant colors, and they really do look good from what I can tell. There's green, yellow, orange, pink, purple, blue, and silver. And we've got an M4, and this is the first time the M4 was on
computer. Before we move on to the colors, If those that list of colors sounds familiar to you, you may be thinking it's exactly the same colors as the iMac was available in before. And I think the names are the same, but the actual colors are different. If you look at the new colors along with the old ones, you will see that generally what they've done is made the backs less dark, because it used to be there was like a really dark saturated color on the back and then a much paler color on the front. Now the backs are not as dark as they were. Some of the colors have shifted in tone, like the green is much more green and less teal. The pink on the back no longer looks red, it looks pink on the back. In general, I think they've improved all the colors. I kind of like the old colors, like they were sort of very dramatic and, you know, very saturated versus very undersaturated. Now they're more evened out. So if you wanted a pink iMac and you're like, but they sold a pink one, that pink one from the back totally looked red. Now this thing looks pink from all angles. The green looks greenier. The yellow looks yellower. I think I endorse the new colors. Every single one of the colors, I believe, except for silver, is new. So check them out the next time you're in an Apple store.
Indeed. So we've got all these new colors, and we've got more information about the M4. And I think this is the first time it's in a computer, not an iPad. Yep. So these all come in the iMac with a 10-core CPU. There's 4 performance cores and 6 efficiency cores. And so there's various flavors of iMac, or you could build them in various ways. There's the 2-port iMac, which has an 8-core CPU and an 8-core GPU. It comes with 16 gigs of RAM, and this is the first time that I'm aware of that an Apple computer, or certainly first time in many, many years, that an Apple computer starts with 16 gigs of RAM, which means what, John?
It's not, look at the title of the graph. We always have to qualify this if people say, what about this model? This is a David Schaub's graph of Apple consumer all-in-one base RAM.
Yeah, which basically means the iMac.
Very specific, and, you know, the iMac, the consumer all-in-one thing. And that chart is the depressing chart that seems to go up and up and up until you get to around whatever that is, 2012-ish, when it stops going up forever and just stays flat until 2024. Now the iMac comes with 16 gigs base RAM. And by the way, that name, I'm not sure if it's the official name, but it's iMac parentheses M4 comma 2 ports. I love when they name them with ports on them. And it does, in fact, have 2 ports, as we'll get to in a second. Your choices for RAM are 16, which is the base RAM, and 24. It is finally safe, entirely safe, to recommend every person in your life that it's okay to get the base amount of RAM in an iMac. We will see this trend continue. You can say it together, everyone. Thank you, Apple Intelligence.
I was honestly, finally.
The only thing that has dragged Apple, it's not the only, I mean, presumably they would have increased it eventually anyway. It's not going to be 2275 or whatever, and they're still shipping 8 gigs of RAM. They would have increased it eventually, but I think it got a nudge from Apple Intelligence. So hallelujah, 16 gigs of RAM as base, even on the cheapest of cheap, the basest of basiest model iMac, 16 gigs of RAM.
That's very good. I'm very, very happy about that. I know we all
are.
Time
for some bad news.
So,
SSDs.
Yes.
Guess what they start at? Still 256.
And I mean, at least they're so close to actual, you know, NVMe SSD pricing, right?
The prices are insane and ridiculous. Sometimes being like 6 times or 8 times the cost of this actual hardware, that all the margin is buried in the storage now. The RAM upgrades, by the way, are still insane, which is why it's so important for 16 to be the base. Because you're like, oh, what if it's not the base? I'll just bump it up. You'll bump it up for astronomically inflated prices, right? So now you don't have to do that anymore. You can get someone a 16 gig. It's the base model, right? You don't have to pay the extra $200 or whatever it is, right? SSDs. Now, arguably, SSDs is not as bad. People can use cloud storage. Not everybody needs a lot of space. RAM is harder to get around because it's kind of like, you know, the programs you run dictate the RAM, but the amount of stuff you have dictates the SSD. You can also attach external disks. There's more workarounds. You can't expand the RAM. You can't expand the storage. I get it. But this is the new thing. This is what happens with any kind of, if you've ever like optimized a program and you found a bottleneck and you're like, this is the slowest part of my program and I improved it by 10 times. Guess what? Now there's a new bottleneck. There's always the next thing that is the worst part of your program or your specs or whatever. And on the iMac, the worst thing about it has now moved from the base RAM to the base SSD. Previously, this was second place for the worst thing, but now it's strong first place. 256 gigs base SSD. It's absurd in this day and age. They should offer more. They don't. Upgrading to 512 or 1 terabyte costs way too much money. Remember that you can attach external drives to this if you really need to. So it's not as bad as the RAM situation, but it's bad. But just FYI, your choices on the base model 2-port M4 are 256, 512, and 1 terabyte.
And we continue on. Gigabit Ethernet is a $30 option, and it's still in the power brick, right?
Yeah, like that's why it's an option, because the port is not on the computer. That $30 option, you're just getting like a power brick with Ethernet cord on it, which I still think is kind of interesting and clever, and it's a side effect of them making the thing too thin. See our long ago discussion of the original M1. Or was it M1? Yeah, the original M1 iMac.
Yep.
Yeah, I believe so. You can get Gigabit Ethernet for $30. There's a new 12 megapixel center stage camera with support for desk view. I don't have in front of me what the old camera was, but apparently it was not that.
So desk view is the thing where the whole point is it's center stage camera saying it's super wide angle, like the one in the Mac Studio. It being super wide angle, they have a way where it can show you what is on the desk in front of the iMac by taking the super wide angle and like de-warping it. So that's cool. And center stage means it will follow you. 12 megapixel, I think that's an increase in resolution. I don't know if it's exactly the same camera that's in the Mac Studio. Is it better than the one that's in the Mac Studio? Is it worse? I would assume it's probably the same. It's confusing because everyone says the old camera was 1080, but this one is 12 megapixel. But they also say this one does 1080 video. So anyway, it's a very wide angle camera.
When you say Mac Studio, you mean the studio display?
Yes, sorry. Studio display. That is what I mean. Sorry.
All right. Continuing along, there are two Thunderbolt or USB 4 ports. This means the 8-core iMac can support one external display with up to 6K resolution at 60 hertz. The 10-core iMac can do up to two external displays with up to 6K resolution at 60 hertz, or one external display with up to 8K resolution at 60 hertz.
And those core counts were the core counts for the GPU. So here's a case where if you pick a binned SoC, you look at the number of cores in the GPU, and that dictates what you can run as an external display. So the binned one has an 8-core GPU, the unbinned one has a 10-core GPU, and the 10-core GPU lets you run more better external displays.
And then apparently Apple's website briefly said that the 10-core could also support one external display with up to 8K resolution at 120 hertz. And John has provided a YouTube link with a timestamp that we'll put in the show notes.
But the website was updated very shortly after that to say, no, just kidding, 60 hertz. We'll see some a little bit more confusion about the display capabilities, but I believe that was an accidental overspecification for this particular model.
We have possibly my favorite news of this entire week, and that is not hyperbole.
No, you skipped it. You skipped something.
Yes, I did. All right. Hello and goodbye, Future Marco.
All right.
You could have let me roll with it, and we could have shimmied it down, but here we are. All right. So we also get Wi-Fi 6E and Bluetooth 5.3, and that is no different than the prior model.
Not different, Wi-Fi 6E is not the latest Wi-Fi standard. Wi-Fi 7 is, and there is a Bluetooth 5.4. I'm not sure if it's out yet, so this is the lowest end model. It's kind of disappointing to see them bumping a bunch of other stuff but not going to Wi-Fi 7, because especially for these type of things where people don't buy new computers that frequently if you're getting like a base iMac or something. But yeah, Wi-Fi 6E and Bluetooth 5.3, those specs may sound familiar. So even though the SoC is massively updated, the wireless stuff is not.
They just wanted it to rhyme, 6C and 5.3. Possibly my favorite news of this week, and this is not hyperbole, is we finally have a new USB-C powered keyboard and mouse and trackpad. And I am deeply excited about this. I'm going to tell a story for the listeners. You two are not allowed to comment. About a week or two ago, I might have spilled a whole bunch of orange flavored water onto my existing keyboard and mouse. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to listeners.
Oh my God.
And the worst part of that moment was realizing I'm going to need to go buy a new keyboard, and I'm going to have to get a new Lightning keyboard. This was again like 2 weeks ago. Thankfully, the water ingress protection on the keyboard, the big keyboard with the inverted T and Touch ID, was excellent. And so I'm still using it right now. And it's not sticky either, which is a double bonus. But I promised myself I wouldn't tell you two that. So that's why I'm just talking to the listeners. Now if I do it again, then I can buy, and I'm thinking about doing it again, so I can buy a USB-C keyboard and mouse, which is excellent news. However, the internet was very perturbed. John, why was the internet perturbed?
The turtle is still harpooned. We are referring to the Apple Magic Mouse, which has its charging port on the bottom, so you have to turn it over on its little hard turtle back, and as it wobbles around, get a little wire in there to charge it, and you can't use it while it's charging. That remains true. Basically, what they did with the peripherals, kind of like they just changed the lightning port to USB-C, but not entirely, and we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, if you're wondering if they redesigned the mouse to be different or to move the charging port, they did not, so... get used to that. One of the things that I saw in the little specs is the way Apple refers to their cheaper keyboard that doesn't have Touch ID. It does have a key where the Touch ID thing is in the upper right-hand corner, but Apple calls it, quote, Magic Keyboard with Lock Key. And I was like, is that new? What the hell is a lock key? But they just mean the key that's in the upper right that has a lock icon on it that it presumably locks your computer, that drives people a little bit batty because they accidentally hit it when they reach for the delete key and it locks their screen. So you can use like Carabiner or something to disable that key. But anyway... the cheap keyboard still has no Touch ID in it. It just has a lock key. We have some semi-breaking news that I didn't have time to confirm, but it looks legit, from Jamie Creamex's? Oh,
no, it's a stupid
that.
Halloween name, I think. And if it's not, I'm going to feel real, real bad.
If it's a Halloween name, anyway, Jamie, insert Halloween name here, pointing out that there is a change to the keyboard that Casey spilled his drink into. He's like, oh, I could just buy another one. Well, if you did buy another one, if you bought the Apple extended keyboard with numeric keypad, whatever, the one with the inverted T arrow keys, apparently the new USB-C models put the little globe icon, the FN globe icon in the lower left, and that took about half the space that used to be used by the control key. So if you're used to having the Apple extended keyboard and reaching all the way down to the lower left corner with your pinky to hit the very big double wide control key, guess what? It's not there anymore. Now there's a single wide control key, and all the way in the corner is not the control key, it's the globe thing. The theory is that that's because the globe key is used for like the window tiling and everything like that. So that's not great, because I really like the double Y control key in the corner there, but I also like the Apple keyboard, so I will just be very careful and not spill drinks into mine, which is very unlikely to happen, because my drink is actually not on a level such that water spilled could get to my keyboard, because my water is below the level of my keyboard. So unless the water leaps out of my glass and jumps up onto my keyboard, I don't have that problem. But Casey, who seemingly cannot take the advice of his... olders and betters, continues to put his drink in a place where it can spill onto his keyboard. And so you should be lucky that it still works, because I assume you would also frown upon the globe key hogging the lower left corner.
In principle, yes. I think I certainly am not keen on that. And when I saw this fly by just a few minutes before recording, I was like, wait, what? I think this is something I could probably get used to, but it's certainly not something I'm seeking out. However, the window tiling thing, I do really enjoy. And actually, this is an aside, but I watched a video from a friend of the show, Quinn Nelson, and I will try to remember to put this one in the show notes, but he was going through some like interesting macOS system tweaks that you can make or something along those lines. I forget exactly what the shtick of the video was. Here we go. Hidden pro tips in macOS Sequoia. And I've never been more excited to go into system preferences, because one of the things, there were two keys to window tiling that Quinn brought to my attention, neither of which I knew were available. First of all, if you're dragging a window around, and I believe it's you hold the option key, then instead of just dragging it willy-nilly, it will try to slot it into one of those like buckets, like half the screen, quarter of the screen, etc., rather than just freeform dragging your window around, which was an incredible improvement in my quality of life. And then the other thing was, it's been driving me bananas that there's a gap in between the windows and around the outside of the windows when you tile them. Like, why? No, I don't need, they don't need to be cushioned. They're fine. They can touch each other. It's not like cars where there's no touching.
That's like my favorite feature of this feature that I don't use. Love the margins. I wish they were adjustable, but it's fine. I don't use this feature, so it's not a big deal, but it's good that the option's there, because Casey, apparently you hate the margins.
I hate the margins. And so you can go somewhere in system preferences. I don't recall exactly where it is, but again, we'll put a link to the video in the show notes where you can see how do you turn off the margins, which I've done, and it's amazing.
We mentioned this on the very show that you are a co-host of, so it's interesting that you had to wait for Quinn's video to learn this.
Jesus.
All right, before we leave the topic of the USB peripherals, because it's got a lot of play, and you know, I think a lot of the people who criticize, especially the Magic Mouse, don't seem to be people who use the Magic Mouse. I use one as my regular mouse, and I have used it for, 10 years? I mean, it's been out for a long time, you know, because I used to use the AA-powered version, which didn't have the charging port problem. It had different problems.
That's true.
But You know, so anyway, I use this mouse for a long time as my only mouse. You know, the only other mice I use in my life are on gaming PCs because it's a terrible gaming mouse. But otherwise, you know, it's this is it. And I really don't like the charging port location being on the bottom. It's awful, but it's not that bad. Like, there are ways they can improve it. Like, I wish the low battery notice would come on a little earlier. Like, some of the reviews have pointed out, like, I think it comes on at something like less than 10% charge. And I think if it would come on at, you know, 25% charge, that would be a lot better, or, you know, something like that. You know, just a little, you know, a little more aggressive on the reminder so that I don't as easily forget to charge it. But ultimately, it's a good design. It's not a great design. And I think most of the people who choose not to use the Magic Mouse are choosing not to because they want a bigger mouse, not because of the charging port location. I do think it would be better if it was in a better location that would allow usage of the mouse during it, like the top center, which I think would be, you know, where every other
center? That's your choice?
On the front, you know, the front center.
You don't mean like the top, like the harpoon, the back of the
turtle. No, I mean where every wired mouse.
You mean
mouse,
where a regular mouse cord comes out.
I mean
yes.
Where every wired mouse connects its wire.
The reason it doesn't connect there is because it wouldn't look as pretty. So this is absolutely a case of form over function.
Well, it would change the height of the front. And so, I've been thinking, like,
it wouldn't
what
change.
If
you'd cut out a little notch for it.
Well,
exactly
I've been thinking, like,
height.
If they actually did that, they would have to probably make it a two-button mouse. Like, because I think the way they would have to do that, it would dramatically increase the front height to fit the port there. So it could be done. I mean, obviously, you look at every other mouse that does it, so obviously it could be done. But it would be a non-trivial change to the shape. And it would probably force the mouse to become something like what everyone actually says they want, like a taller, because I think the whole thing would have to get taller.
You just need a USB-C for it on the front. You could not change the profile at all except for one little like horizontal bump out for the USB-C. It would be ugly, and that's why they didn't do it.
Well, right.
I don't think you'd have to change the profile at all, nor would you have to make it an actual split two button. It's just that the one big smooth top button would now have a little flattened part in the front where the thing plugs in. And if you don't want it to be raised at all, you'd cut a notch into the front of it, like a little like toe into it or whatever. Like, I don't think the charging port, the reason people are snarking about it is because how it's still the same place it was, which is not optimal. But here's the thing. They didn't redesign their peripherals, right? It's just like with the AirPods Max or any of the other things. This is not a redesign. They just added USB-C, right? If they had totally redesigned their mouse, and the new mouse, whatever the new mouse looked like, and the new mouse also had the charging port at the very bottom, then I would be very upset. But I'm not too upset about this because they didn't redesign it. It's the same mouse as it was before. They just changed the port, right? And you can be upset that they didn't redesign it, but, like, good luck because they do not redesign their peripherals very often, right? It's a long time between designs of these things. I'm not particularly upset about it because, like, I don't use that mouse, and it's not a redesign, right? Presumably, when they do a redesign someday, who knows when at this point, when they do a redesign, then it will be time to say, what have they learned about the charging port location, right? And have they decided to change this from a very low profile mouse to a taller one or whatever? And I'm not sure everybody wants a taller one. Some people want a taller one. Some people like the low profile one. I don't know what the ratio is or whatever, but that is one of the compromises of the low profile one they've always done. It is selecting beautiful form over this one aspect of function, which may or may not bother you at all. Most of the people, like you said, Marco, who don't use it, it's because of the shape of the mouse. It has nothing to do with the charging port.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm disappointed in this update, for sure. It will continue to be the mouse that I use because, honestly, frankly, what I am hooked on this mouse is the scrolling. Because you can swipe your finger on the top and it scrolls like Apple's trackpads do. That, to me, is the reason I use it. I'm not choosing a stupid battery design. I'm not choosing a low shape. I'm choosing that. And as far as I know, no other mice on the market are able to do that. So, as long as that continues to be the case, I'm going to keep using this mouse because that the scrolling to me is everything. And so, you know, and I'm fine with the rest of it. But yeah, it could have been made a lot better and they just didn't do it. And sometimes Apple does these kind of like, you know, cynical updates almost where it's like we so don't care about this product but we have some reason we need to update it that we're going to do just the absolute bare minimum. You see also the iPad mini update. We're going to do the absolute bare minimum here and just like You know, it's like the Unix touch command. Just touch the product. Change as little as possible. Like, we're new. We updated it. USB-C. That's what you guys wanted, right? You know, crickets. You know, that's...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're, like, on a schedule for updating their peripherals or their monitors, for that matter.
They're definitely not.
In practice, it's just many, 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 many years between. And it's just, like, it's not the time for them to update the peripherals. But they do want to, you know, keep them from being embarrassingly out of date with Lightning. So they just swap the port. When it comes time to them for them to make new peripherals at some point in the future, be careful what you wish for. Maybe they'll have a totally new idea about what they want to do. And the thing that you loved about it, like the touch scrolling, will be gone. And by the way, third parties could do touch scrolling just like Apple does. They just choose not to because the market for such a mouse, I guess manufacturers think it would be very small because that's not what people want. So they want 15 actual physical buttons all over the thing, or they want gamer mice or what. I don't, you know, the whole peripheral market is weird. But so there could be third parties that do a mouse that has a great touch surface on it. In fact, a better one, because if you look at the touch surfaces inside the Magic Mouse, it's not that sophisticated or high resolution. So they could even improve that. But apparently no one feels like doing it. So it's the Apple Mouse or nothing. And someday when they change it, who knows? Maybe you'll need to hoard these little sushi mice because the new ones will be not to your liking.
I mean, given that they, for years, came with desktop Macs, and everyone has like a box of it in their closet somewhere who's ever bought a desktop Mac and not wanted to use it.
I've got some totally unopened ones.
Right. Like, I'm sure there will never be a time where these are going to be hard to find if you want one.
Well, maybe the batteries will be dead and won't accept the charge.
Well, then those AA battery ones would be really compelling. Yeah. Got to bring those back. No, I mean, and the thing is, like, there is so much more they could have done to this mouse to update it. Like, for instance, maybe move to a better Bluetooth standard. You know, the modern Bluetooth standards are even more, you know, efficient and faster and everything. Maybe add multi-device pairing. That would be great. I would love multi-Mac pairing on the Magic Mouse.
And they used to have that, by the way. I think the original Magic keyboards had multi-Mac pairing, but the modern ones do not, which is like a regression, which is not great.
Yeah, like, I would love them to just add, you know, features like that. Like, that kind of feature does not require
haptic,
a change.
Haptic feedback in the mouse might be cool.
I don't even think it needs that necessarily, but just, like, just make it a better mouse. And that, to me, is things like multi-device pairing and, you know, certainly if they can
sample
improve
sample rate, resolution of the sensor, stuff that they haven't really been aggressive in updating yet. But, like I said, it's apparently not time for that mouse to be updated. Someday they'll do it, but that day is not today. So whatever you get, this is not a redesign.
Yeah. That being said, it was very tempting for me to buy a new trackpad and mouse because they are the only thing left on my desk that I routinely use that uses Lightning. And so I have this dumb little Lightning adapter that sits on top of my desk all the time just to charge up these keyboards, this trackpad and mouse that I have here. And like, I'm like, I don't want to spend $250 to get rid of this one tiny thing off my desk. But God, is it tempting.
And you don't have to worry about the weird globe key because you don't use that keyboard, right?
Right, right.
I had the exact same thought. And I could get black ones, which at the time I bought these, there were no black externals that had Touch ID. And now I could. Very tempted. Holidays are coming, y'all. Holidays are coming. I'm just saying.
That's another thing, by the way, about the iMacs. Of course, all the iMacs, like they always have, come with color match peripherals. I don't know if the color match peripherals have changed color. I assume they have to match the new colors. Like the new green mouse looks different than the old green mouse. But you get a color match cords, color match mouse and keyboard with whatever color of iMac you pick. And you cannot buy those colored peripherals separately. So if you just have a random Mac and you're like, I would love to have a pink keyboard, tough luck. Apparently Apple will not sell you one, which makes me wonder if your keyboard breaks and you, like, you know, want to get a new one, or like it has a failure and you want to get a new one under warranty. Presumably Apple has the ability to get you a new pink keyboard for your pink iMac, and they will do so. But it's weird that they don't sell them. Maybe it's just an inventory issue and it'd be tough to keep all those colors in stock. But be aware, you cannot buy one of the colorful ones of any of these things.
Well, I mean, first of all, yeah, Apple does typically have a mechanism by which if you give them the serial number of the Mac and you say, I broke my keyboard, please sell me a new one, they will usually sell you one through some kind of, but, you know, you have to, like, go to the Genius people in the store and have them work it out for you and stuff. But there is a mechanism for that usually. And second of all, as mentioned, a lot of people who buy these computers that come with these peripherals don't end up using those peripherals. There is a healthy volume, usually on eBay, of any color you want of iMac keyboard, mouse, and trackpad. So if you ever want, like, you know, the orange mouse, just go to eBay. You can usually find it for about list price.
It's kind of weird, though, that they don't have them, like, for example, just for mail order. Like, just, I mean, maybe if there's a wait because stock, whatever, but they, I feel like they should just be something that you can either have some limited amount of stock on the shelf in an Apple store or just buy it through the Apple store online. But instead of going to eBay or having to either legitimately or pretend you have one of the colored iMacs.
Yeah. One thing I'm a little sad about is they did not, and as, you know, same story with the Harpoon Turtle, they didn't change the design of the smaller Touch ID keyboard. I have the, what is it, 100 whatever key, big keyboard that has a numeric keypad on it. And I did that expressly because I wanted the inverted T arrow buttons. And I don't really need the numeric keypad, and I do use it since it's here, but I would much prefer not to have it if I could. But I'm not going back to the weirdo, you know, up down half height buttons on the little keyboard, and they didn't redesign that either, and that bums me out. But here we are. Going back a half step, Marco, do you, I'm sure we've talked about this at some point in the past. Hi, John. Marco, do you ever use a Magic trackpad at your desk? Like, is that just not your cup of tea?
He just said he did like 3 minutes ago.
Oh, I missed that. I'm sorry. I totally missed that.
It's not even in a previous episode.
Yeah, all right. For a long time, I've been left-hand trackpad, right-hand mouse. And to the point where I'm so accustomed to it that now, like, there was a time when I had to, like, I forget why, somehow I had to go without my trackpad for, like, a day. And everything felt broken to me. It was like, wait, what? I can't, because I kind of just switch back and forth. Like, I'll use the trackpad for, like, little motions here or there. So, yeah, I use both. It was, you know, I'm not ambidextrous in other ways, but this was fairly easy to train myself to do, and it's pretty helpful.
It's like the NCIS episode with the two people typing on the keyboard at the same time, but that's Marco's daily life.
Right. But you've never tried moving it to your dominant position, the trackpad?
Because he's using the mouse, too.
I know, yeah. I know, but I'm saying you couldn't or wouldn't want to substitute and just go all trackpad all the time?
One time when I had to harpoon my mouse to charge it for a while unexpectedly, I did exactly that, and it was fine. I could do it for a while, and I'm sure if I got used to it, it would be fine. But, you know, keep in mind too, like, I use a tremendous monitor, and that's a lot of real estate to try to be precise with a touchpad with, and I find the mouse just better for navigating the huge expanse of space and you know, getting the precision there.
I mean, I'm not trying to imply that you're wrong or anything like that. I'm just a little surprised because, as I've said many times on the show, I thought I was the last of the mouse holdouts in years ago. I went all in on the trackpads. And now it seems like I'm the only one.
I will be the last mouse holdout because I will never willingly use a trackpad instead of a mouse. Never. I have one. I even have one. I tried it. No, it's never going to happen.
Marco, do you travel with the Magic Mouse then? So if you're doing more than just a few minutes of work, you're busting out the mouse?
No. I'm just using the trackpad on the laptop when I travel.
Yeah, fair enough. Wow, did we get sidetracked? I think that's in no small part my fault. So coming back to the actual news. Yeah, I know, right? The iMac, I think we've covered everything except the starting price is still
$1,500. No.
Well, we already did the keyboard stuff.
All right, let me take this.
All right, please feel free. Hello and goodbye, future Marco.
You tell the
Returning
story.
Returning to the iMac with their weird parenthesized names. This is the iMac parentheses M4 comma 4 ports. What is different when you get the one with 4 ports? Obviously, it has 4 ports. We'll get to that in a second. But if you get the 4-port one, you get a 10-core CPU and a 10-core GPU as opposed to the binned versions of them. And you get a RAM that goes up to 32 gigs. You can get 16, 24, or 32, which is the thing you don't get an option for on the 2-port version. Your SSD still starts at 256, even though this is the fancy iMac. And it's 256, 512, 1 terabyte. And now you can get a 2 terabyte option. Gigabit Ethernet is standard on the power brick thingy on the 4-port version. There's an option for nanotexture glass. I don't know if this is the same nanotexture as the iPad or the same nanotexture as the XDR because those are two different nanotexture processes. I don't know which one this is, but it's a $200 option, and you get a polishing cloth. You obviously get 4 ports, 4 Thunderbolt 4 ports. On the M3 and earlier versions, it was 2 Thunderbolt and 2 USB. So like on the old iMacs with 4 ports, there was 2 Thunderbolt and 2 USB. Now all 4 ports are Thunderbolt. That's because the M4 has 4 Thunderbolt controllers versus 2 in the M3 and earlier. And obviously, all these things have headphone jacks on the side because it doesn't fit because on the back because it's too skinny. You get a Magic Keyboard with Touch ID. And now Casey seems to want to talk about pricing.
Indeed.
Wow.
So the M4 with two ports is $1,300, and the iMac with two ports, whatever I just said, the iMac with two ports is $1,300. The iMac with four ports is $1,500.
That's the starting price, obviously. As soon as you touch anything having to do with an option, the price balloons very rapidly and makes you really question what it is you're doing. But thankfully, you don't have to touch that ramp setting anymore unless you really want it. Like, and we've gone through this too many times, so I don't want to go over it again, but like the prices for their upgrades, that's where all the margin is.
Yeah, very much so. But the good news is there's target... Oh, no, never mind. There's no target display mode. I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, so this is... Target display mode, for people who don't remember, back in the day, Apple would give these all-in-one Macs with a big screen, these all-in-one iMacs with a big screen. They would say, hey, if you ever don't want to use this as a computer anymore, you can use it as a monitor because it's got a really big monitor that's built into it. So if the Mac part of it becomes like old and just like too slow for you or whatever, but the monitor still looks as good as it did the day you bought it, now you can just buy like a Mac Mini or something, connect it to your iMac, and use the iMac as a monitor. Because sometimes, especially in the days of the 5K iMac, those monitors were really good. And Apple took away that feature years and years ago, and everyone keeps waiting for it to come back on the all-in-ones. This is not that time. It's getting less excusable not to have this feature, because these days, these Macs have Thunderbolt ports on the back of them. That is what is used to drive monitors. It's not like the case where, oh, you couldn't even run the 5K because it only works internally with the tool display controllers and there's no external bus. No, there's external buses now that could drive this monitor. This is only a 24-inch monitor. It's got a Thunderbolt 4 port on the back of it. Like, it's really small and thin. It doesn't take up a lot of room. It would be a perfect monitor. And the other angle is the environment. It's creating more e-waste when an iMac gets old. And it's a little bit old and slow, or maybe you bought it with only 8 gigs of RAM because you got the base model and now it's kind of chugging and it can't do Apple Intelligence. Instead of like throwing it out or trying to give it away to someone who might want an old junky computer, you could keep using it. Keep it in your house. It could prevent you from buying another display because, hey, you've already got a really nice display, and it would prevent you from throwing it out, reducing e-waste. Now, in the grand scheme of things, so few iMacs are purchased that it probably doesn't really matter, but the lack of target display mode is getting worse and not better as the iMac becomes more and more like a monitor, has even better potential ports to drive it, and as Apple's environmental efforts get more and more urgent as 2030 approaches.
Yeah, and so speaking of environment, the new iMac with M4 is designed with the environment in mind, with 100% recycled aluminum in the stand and 100% recycled gold plating, tin soldering, and copper in multiple printed circuit boards. iMac meets Apple's high standards for energy efficiency and is free of mercury, brominated, flame retardants, and PVC. New this year, the packaging of iMac is entirely fiber-based, bringing Apple closer to its goal to remove plastic from its packaging by 2025. You can pre-order it right now and could as of Monday. It ships sometime next week, I think Friday. I don't know if that's 100% confirmed, but I believe it's Friday. I'm not sure why they didn't say that in the like videos and whatnot, but here we are.
So anything else? iMac, before we move on from the next thing, the iMac has always, the colored iMacs have always been really good computers. They remain really good computers. If you bought an M3 iMac the week before this one came out, as long as you got it with enough RAM, you're fine. This is a good update. They updated... Like, when they update the lowest end in a product line, it's hard to get too mad. They're like, well, it should have Wi-Fi 7 and has Wi-Fi 6E. And, you know, like, it's a low-end product. You want it to be inexpensive. And, honestly, nobody needs or cares about the particular Wi-Fi standard on just a basic iMac. The fact that they come with 16 gigs of RAM makes this potentially the best iMac update in years. The M3 was already more than fast enough to do what most people are going to do with the iMac. The M4 is incredibly fast. Reminder of this chip came in the iPad. The single core performance of the M4 is ridiculously good. That's what matters for a lot of the sort of plain, boring, single core, single task type operations that someone's going to do, like rendering web pages or just doing individual stuff that's not like massively parallel. The colors are great. I think this is a really good iMac upgrade. And I know I complained about the SSD. That's just because that's the new bottleneck. That is the thing we'll be complaining about from now on. But everything else, I think they've pretty much done an amazing job on. If you want to buy an all-in-one computer for someone in your life, show them a bunch of iMacs. Let them pick the color. They'll love it.
Yeah, yep, it's agreed. A great overall computer. And you know, and even though, you know, John mentioned that the spec up pricing is really rough, you know, especially when you look at the storage pricing. Dear God. But that being said, if you were the kind of person who would spec up the RAM before, it's effectively a price drop now because the base has gone from 8 to 16. So if you were otherwise upgrading from 8 to 16, that was $200 before. So now it's kind of like having a $200 price drop on your total configuration if you were going to get anything more than 8 gigs of RAM. So, you know, overall, like, yeah, you know, you win some, you lose some with Apple. I wouldn't expect the storage to be anywhere close to what it costs on the market because it never is, even though I would expect it to get cheaper over time, Apple. But regardless, we didn't win anything on the storage this time, but we did make a pretty big gain on the RAM.
So I was very amused and impressed by Tuesday's announcements. No sarcasm. I was here for it. And Tuesday was the Mac Mini, and oh man, it's mini. So there's a newsroom post. There's an announcement video, just like with the iMac, and it got more mini for sure. So the Mac Mini is now, what did they say, 5 inches by 5 inches, I believe.
Yeah.
It is also taller than it used to be, which is not a bad thing. And in fact, we'll talk about why it's a good thing. But it's 2 inches high, 5 inches wide, 5 inches deep. The M2 Mac Mini, by comparison, was a little bit less than an inch and a half high, so half an inch shorter. But it was 7¾ inches wide and deep. So that makes a difference of 0.59 inches in the height dimension and 2.75 inches in the width and depth dimension.
Yeah, it ends up being something like 2/3 the volume total of the old one, which is actually not as much minier than the rumors were suggesting. You know, people were expecting like an Apple TV size thing. It's nowhere near that. It is not that much smaller, but it is noticeably smaller.
Yeah, and speaking of the Apple TV, that is 1.3 inches high as compared to 2 and 3.66 inches wide and deep as compared to 5. So the Apple TV is just a little bit less than 3/4 of an inch squatter and about 1⅓ inches less wide and less deep. The M4 Mac Mini is 1.5 pounds for the M4, or interestingly, 1.6 pounds for the M4 Pro. The M2 Mac Mini, by comparison, was 2.6 to 2.8 pounds, so a difference of 1.1 to 1.2 pounds. The Apple TV, meanwhile, is under 0.5 pound, no matter how you slice it, so about 1/3 as heavy.
Station break. You hear that? Maybe you can, because Zoom is canceling it out.
That's up the lawnmower?
Yes, the landscapers are here, so I don't know what you want to do.
I assure you it's not going to be worse than the shower door installation happening in my house.
I was
right
going to say, somebody's like fucking 3D printing over there.
No, that's I'm giving myself the work here. There was no other time to schedule these two things, so here we are.
Really?
Can we do like 2 minutes? Because I think they'll be done not being outside my actual window for 2 minutes.
We are sponsored this week by somebody.
Vamp for a few minutes for the bootleg people.
Yeah.
While we do that, let me look, scroll through if there's anything that's missing. If you
we will temporarily become a
about the,
karaoke show.
The MacBook Pros. I did hear something on Marco's side, but I would not have identified it as a shower door installation. Although maybe
no,
it was
I thought
power
it was
tool.
I thought it was 3D printing of some sort.
A lot of grinding, drilling happening. Not in a sexy way.
Yeah.
gracious. Ay. You know, I feel like John has deliberately paid the landscapers to do this because Marco and me, particularly me, have been begging John to do daytime recordings for at least a year now. And according to John, every single day for 9 hours a day.
According to John, what I always say is a roll of the dice. You never know what you're going to get. They don't come on any fixed schedule. Sometimes you get lucky. And I think this is the first time we've gotten unlucky. We recorded in the day
That's
several
true,
times.
Actually.
We've always been lucky. But, you know, your number comes up eventually, and here it is. And because it's the fall, we get the leaf blowers.
Even better.
It's not just the mower. You get the leaf blowers, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? Because I care about the fidelity of my side of the recording, because I don't want Marco to have too much more work, we replaced all the windows in the house earlier this year. If you loved your co-host, John, you would also replace all the windows in your house.
I'm sure that's
I would
that's
I can't,
the only
I can't
reason
actually
you
hear you because
them.
Of the leaf blowers. If I love my co-host, I would do what?
I said if you loved Marco and didn't want to make more work for him, you would replace all the windows in your house and make them more insulated.
I did replace all the windows in my house.
I thought you might have, actually.
I
As
did
I was
that.
Saying that, I was like, wait,
but they were very expensive. They're double pane. They're they're the same. They're actually the exact same model of window that Marco had in his old house.
The Marvins?
Yeah. Yeah, or whatever that brand is with the M. Because I remember when I came to your house after you'd done the replacement, I said, these are the same windows we got. Yep. I recognize these windows. They're good windows, but like leaf blowers. Literally feet from the room that I'm in. Not much you can do about that.
Right. I'm not trying to be snarky. Do you feel like that is a sufficient amount of vamping, or would you like to vamp a little longer?
I think the sound is going down. I don't know.
It certainly like is a hell of a lot less loud.
Right, it's the question of whether they're done or whether they're going to come and make another pass.
It's certainly getting louder.
The thing with the leaf blowers is they always want to come back. The mowing is like, okay, they're going to go back and forth. Not that there's anything wrong with the mow, but they're just like, whatever. But the leaf blowing, yeah, I feel like they're coming back now.
Well, how much do you care about the Mac Mini?
Yeah, right.
I do want to say some things before we move on from the size comparison thing. So I do actually have a thing to say about that before we move on to the next case section. But okay. I don't know if it can... If you want to remove the leaf blowing from behind me when I say it, I can say it.
It's not super easy to remove, so we can wait. I mean, it's all relative. It's like, how much can I remove? Well, I can remove some. I can't remove that much.
They should be gone pretty soon, and honestly, you're getting real extra bootleg bonus value.
Yeah, right, exactly.
For the bootleg people. Here's some more vamping. Did you guys actually already vote or no?
No,
I'm going in person.
Yeah, we have voted absentee a couple times, both by mail and by dropping the ballot off at the local registrar or whatever. But generally speaking, we prefer to do it in person, in part because I don't have trust isn't the word I'm looking for, but I can't think of a better one. I don't entirely trust the not the organization, but like I have qualms about trusting the system. Even though the county in which I live, I actually think is very good about these sorts of things, and I have no justifiable reason not to trust them, I kind of don't. And also because we really like having the kids involved and going with us, helping us fill out the ballot, not insofar as like either squiggling in the bubbles or just watching us do it. And I feel like that's an important thing that I never really got growing up. And so we try to make sure that we do that with the kids, and doing that on a day that they're off from school is much easier.
For bootleg people, if you're listening, what I did was early voting, which is not mail-in or absentee thing. It's just regular voting. You go there in person, you do the exact same thing you would do, except it's on a day that's before Election Day. And around here, they have early voting on several different dates before Election Day. It's a nice way to beat the crowds. If you already know who you're going to vote for, you can vote a week or two early and not have to wait on any potentially long line. And you're still voting in person, and you don't have to worry about the terrible postmaster general that Trump put in, destroying the U.S. Postal Service for no reason or for terrible reasons, and making it more difficult for your ballots to arrive in time. You don't have to worry about people setting fire to ballot boxes, which I know it's a sensational story that happened. It didn't actually burn that many ballots, and it's not a big deal. But the fact that anyone is even attempting to do that is not reassuring.
Yes,
but anyway,
more than
early
zero
voting
is alarming enough.
Yeah, I highly endorse early voting because it gets it out of the way. It's just like buying early from the ATV store. Like maybe you're gonna forget.
Nice,
or you're gonna get busy. Oh, is today election day? Oh, I actually can't get away. Oh, work is real busy or whatever. Do it if there are early voting dates. Check your area where you live. You may be able to vote early. Some of those dates may have already passed, but I think it's great.
Yeah.
Do you have any interesting ballot questions on your? Do you aware of any interesting ballot questions on your?
You know, I'm not actually. I should look at that.
Oh, well, we have.
You didn't get the little thing in the mail where they send you like the little paper that has like the for and against arguments for all the ballot questions.
No, so maybe we don't have any.
I throw away a lot of mail.
Yeah, that's also true.
We had a bunch. We had like we want the MCAST test to be here. Do you want to allow certain people to unionize? Do you want tipped workers to get the actual minimum wage over a series of years? Lots of good stuff to vote for. All right, I think we're clear.
All right, now you've nerd sniped me about the ballot. I don't think we have any measures.
Well, look it up before you show up, and you're like, I don't know what to fill in with this circle.
Yeah, that's
like,
good. Yeah. That's a good point. Candidates.
All right, let me continue to say what I had to say about the size of the case, because I think it's where we left off.
Yeah, we hadn't yet talked about airflow or anything. Just to be clear,
right,
we were just talking about
portion dimensions.
Yeah. All right, goodbye, Feature Marco.
Bye.
So as for the case, like, yeah, the rumors of it being Apple TV, it's pretty squarely between the Apple TV and the old Mac Mini. And remember, the old Mac Mini, those that case dimension has lasted 14 years, all the way back to ones that had an optical drive slit in it to know how old that case is. So it's long in the tooth. But what they've essentially made is, it is not a, like, Mac Apple TV. It is a very small Mac Studio. Proportion-wise, appearance-wise, it looks like they took a Mac Studio and hit it with a shrink ray. And now it is smaller. And so that is clearly like the proportions they're going for. And I think it looks good. It would have been cool if it came in like space black or something, and then it would have looked even more like an Apple TV. But thumbs up for the case design. Having not seen one in person, I think they did something smart by it enhances the family resemblance of the Mac family. Because before, the Mac Mini was kind of like the odd one out. It's like, none of the other Macs look anything like this. But now it just looks like a small Mac Studio, which is cool.
Yeah. The only thing I would say about the physical design of it is, if using it in server racks or server environments is as common as some people might think or assume, I actually have no idea how common that is. But if it's common to use them as servers, this design probably is worse on a few fronts for that. You know, for instance, the old design would fit into one rack unit, one U of height, and this one does not.
But, I mean, flat, though, but anyone who racks the old Mac Minis put them on their side, though, didn't they?
I think, but yeah, so we'll see. But anyway, you could get a 1U mount that held, like, you know, two of them next to each other or something like that if you didn't need that many of them. So, you know, there's obviously, you know, custom things for having a whole bunch of them, but if you only have, like, one or two, the old design is probably better for that. The new design also, because they moved the power button to the back left bottom of it, that's going to make it fairly difficult to reach if it's mounted in pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, you got to be able to fit your finger in there. And about that power button, right? So that's where it is. It is literally on the bottom in the corner. I think I understand why they put it there, and I think it has mostly to do with cost. The Mac Studio, that this is the shrunken version of, has one of those, like, practical joke hidden power buttons that no one can ever find unless you already know where it is. It's on, like, the back left corner, and it's so carefully, precisely machined into the case with just a slight indent that is actually hard to find, even by feel, even when you know where it is. But that buttons like that add cost. First of all, you got to punch a hole in the case, and I don't know if this is in the notes, but, like, this new Mac Mini's case is made by some, like, less expensive extruding process that saves aluminum for environmental reasons, right? If you had to take all these cases and incredibly precisely machine out a little thing for the power button and then incredibly precisely machine the aluminum power button that's going to go in that place, that adds a lot of cost to what is supposed to be an expensive computer, right? So if you're not going to do it like the Mac Studio, your other choice is, okay, it could just be on the front, back, or sides, not on, like, because the one on the Mac Studio, it's on, like, the curve, or it's, like, it's not just, like, straight-on circle. It's weird. You could do it on the sides and make it a straight-on circle, which would be a little bit less expensive, but you're still machining a hole in the case. You're still machining the aluminum button or whatever.
Well, hold
putting
on,
it on
that's
the bottom.
Exactly how the old Mac Mini did it, though.
Right,
was a button,
sure, right,
on,
I know,
the curvature,
but, like,
in the aluminum.
Right, but this is cheaper. And why is it cheaper? Because on the bottom, it's a hole in plastic, which is way cheaper, and it's a plastic button. I think it's plastic. If that's black aluminum, then it's not for price reasons. But I'm assuming the bottom is plastic. At the very least, it's straight on. And yeah, so that's where they put the power button. I think the power button in the Mac Studio is also kind of annoying as someone who has to reach under my desk to get it there. Power button in the front would be uglier but a little bit more functional. But my guess is that for a computer this small, they're saving costs. And also, if you look at the, like, I mean, we'll see it in the iFixit teardown, but even look at Apple's, like, internals showing what is inside this case. It's pretty tightly packed in there. You could get a power button pretty much on any surface if you wanted to. But the bottom is probably the most convenient. So as someone who never shuts down their computers, I don't really care about this. But you're right, yeah. Marco, that the rack, especially if they're on their sides in the rack, or even if they're, especially if they're on the, they're not on their sides, getting to that power button requires you to either, like, pull the things out so you can get at them, or if they're on their sides, to leave a big enough gap for your finger to go in.
If it's in, like, a cabinet somewhere, like in part of your TV console, or, you know, just anywhere that you might have one of these things not on a desk, it's going to be really tough to get to that power button in a lot of those cases. By the way, some real-time follow-up, thanks to ZM Knox in the chat. The old Mac Mini, the power button was on a curved surface, but it was that black plastic section of the back. So it was curved in plastic, not in metal.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a smaller computer. Like, this is a compromise, and I kind of understand why they did it. Again, this is their cheapest standalone, like, non-monitor desktop thing. So I give them a lot of pass on this. the airflow for this case, according to Apple's little diagram, it's all through the bottom, right? So there's no vents on the front, on the back, on the top, on any place like that. It's just that circular vent on the bottom. And there, according to Apple's diagrams, it pulls cold air in from the front of the circle, swirls it around, going across all the internals, and pushes hot air out of the back of the circle. So you could still kind of use it in a rack on its side with the cold in the front and the hot in the back, but it's weird that it's just a single circular thing. They do the same design they did with the Apple TV, where it's got the logic board, and then on top of the logic board is the analog circuit board for the power supply and everything, so the heat from that hopefully rises away from the logic board, right? But if you have it outside, I guess that doesn't really help. Anyway, that's their cooling design. I hope it's quiet. The Apple TVs that had a fan were so quiet that I literally could not hear them with my old man ears. I believe the new Apple TV does not actually have a fan, which is why it thermal throttles all the time. This one does have a fan, and hopefully it is quiet.
I do worry a little bit about this airflow design. I think it is very likely to be quiet because there are no openings on the sides or top. So I think it's very likely to be quiet. What I worry about is its thermal cooling capacity. Like I think it's very likely not to have a huge amount of cooling capacity, and this, I think, is more likely to throttle than a more open air design like the Mac Studio is.
I mean, this is considering what this comes with, which we'll get to the processors in a second. This is very much like take what's in our lower end laptops, not our very highest end laptop, and put it in a case that's way thicker than a laptop. You think that would give them enough room to do cooling that's at least as good as a laptop. And I hope that's what they achieved. Obviously, if they had decided, well, this is supposed to be a performance-oriented computer, they would just do what performance-oriented computers do, which is you put a bunch of holes in the front to take the air in and a bunch of holes in the back to push the hot air out and have everything go straight through the case. That is not what they did. That's not what this computer is for. I really do hope, though, that it has at least as good cooling as the MacBook Pros that have these same chips in them, because it's so much thicker than them. Obviously, those ones have more room to spread out stuff like the power supply. Well, actually, they don't need to do with that because it's in a power brick. But they have more room to spread stuff out. So we'll see how these work. But considering how they've done with the Apple TV and all the past Mac Minis and the low power of the M series chips, I'm pretty optimistic that unless they do like a Mac Studio, M1 Mac Studio style fan that makes some obnoxious noise, that this one should be fine. I bet you could get it to thermal throttle, but probably I'm hoping no more than you could get the equivalent MacBook Pro to thermal throttle.
All right, so it has an M4 10-core CPU, 10-core GPU, or
no bend ones.
Yep, no bend ones, just that one. Or you can opt into the M4 Pro, and I believe this was the debut of the M4 Pro. 273 gigabits per gigabits, not bytes, right?
Gigabytes.
Gigabytes. Thank you for the clarification. Yep, you're right. No, you're right. I messed up. 273 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth, which is 75% higher than the M3 Pro. My word, the M3 Pro had 150 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth. That is bananas.
And Apple will emphasize to you, if you mention this at all to them, that's really good for AI, they will tell you.
Yes,
in general, the increasing memory bandwidth is good for, it's good for everything. But like, remember that these things use sort of unified memory for the GPU and the CPU. In the olden days at Apple where things were split, very often the video card would have tremendous bandwidth to its video memory, and then the CPU would have lower bandwidth and narrower buses to its main memory. But combining them both here means that there is a good reason to keep cranking up that memory bandwidth, even if only for the GPU stuff. But guess what? That's the exact same bus that the CPU gets its memory as well. So this is a rising tide that raises all boats, and it is a big jump over the M3 Pro, which was no slouch. So thumbs up on this.
Yeah. So the CPU situation for the M4 Pro Mac Mini, there's a 14-core CPU, and then I guess you can option a bend version. Is that right? That's 12-core?
Yeah, 12-core bend.
Then there's 10 performance cores on the 14-core CPU and 4 efficiency cores, or, you know, again, there's 8 performance cores on the bend version, 4 efficiency cores. The M3 Pro has a 120, is that right? That's a 12-core CPU. What is it? Goodbye, San Diego. It's a 12-core CPU, 6 performance cores, 6 efficiency cores on the M3.
Remember, the M3 Pro was a weird one because they had done something different. The 6-6 split between performance and efficiency was more efficiency cores, and it was kind of a strange arrangement. The M3 Pro was very different from like the predecessors used to be. They would just take the Max chip and like remove some stuff from it. But the M3 Pro was totally its own chip, and they went with 6 and 6. And apparently, for whatever reasons, they decided that arrangement was not what they want to keep going with. So now the M4 Pro is 10 and 4, back to sort of very heavily biased towards performance, right? The 6 efficiency cores, sacrificing some of those transistors for more efficiency cores and fewer performance cores, that's not what they want to do with the M4 Pro. So the M4 Pro memory bandwidth is hugely increased, and it is a 10-4 arrangement instead of 6-6.
And then the 20-core GPU, or the 16-core for the binned version, that is up from 18 cores and 14 cores in the M3 Pro. Then 16-core neural engine, same as the M3 Pro. So, yeah, there's a lot going on here. And this is a lot for a little baby computer.
Yeah, they keep putting in these little spec things next to the CPU, and I can't tell if they're giving new information about like the width of the instruction decode or improved branch prediction or larger reorder buffers. I don't know if that's new information now. For the most part, it doesn't matter. As we saw, like I said, with the M4, when we were benchmarking that in the iPad, just incredible single core performance numbers. Presumably, that same M4 in a Mac Mini will do even better, because I'm guessing it's clocked higher and has better cooling on it. And the M4 Pro, we don't have any benchmarks at this point, although probably they're being published as we're talking right now. This chip looks good. If you thought the M3 Pro was like, it's not as good as the M2 and M1 Pro, it's just kind of like wimpy or whatever, I think they have reversed that, and now the M4 Pro is really earning that Pro suffix.
Yeah, it really does jump up quite a bit. And I would even, you know, jumping ahead a little bit, if you look at what the Max is that was released today, I think the Pro stands up pretty well against it.
Yep.
It's substantially cheaper, which we'll get to in a little bit, but yeah.
Yep. John, what's the SSD situation?
Grim. It's grim is what it is. Hey, it's the Mac Mini. It's their lowest end desktop, and it starts at 250 gig SSD, which you may think, well, maybe people don't need a lot of storage. Who cares what it starts at? You care, because getting anything bigger costs so much money. It just costs so much. It's ridiculous. So I really wish they had bumped the base, but they didn't. Your choices are 256, 512, 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, 4 terabyte, and 8 terabyte. And if you get an 8 terabyte, you might as well like buy a new car with your Mac Mini. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the pricing of the SSD options has not changed. It's still like a $2,200 option to go 8 terabytes on most of
which is not how much. I mean, like, just look at the 1 terabyte. Like, it's just, it's insane. The pricing is insane. So SSDs, bad situation. Hopefully you can get by with the base. Remember, unlike RAM, with the SSD, you do have the option to just buy an external SSD, connect it to a Thunderbolt port, and expand your storage that way. It is slightly less convenient, but at least you have that option. So it's good that the RAM situation is, ta-da, 16 base on all of the Mac Minis, which is great. Ooh. Thumbs up, love it. Your choices are 16, 24, 32, 48, and 64, a wide range of options, all of which are priced insanely, except for the base 16, which should be enough for most uses for a Mac Mini.
Yeah, the Mac Mini has never been a good value when you spec it up, just like many Apple computers. You know, the value gets eroded very quickly once you spec up anything. That's why the base model is so important. And again, just like the other computers that used to start at 8 that now start at 16, it's almost like getting a $200 price drop if you were going to upgrade to 16 anyway. So bravo for the 16, thumbs down on the storage. You know, we'll get to that some other time.
Thank you, Apple Intelligence.
Indeed. The port situation on the front, like the Mac Studio, there are two USB-C ports. They are USB 3 or 10 gigabits, excuse me, per second. There's a headphone port and a power indicator light. On the back, you've got power, Ethernet, HDMI, and 3 Thunderbolt ports. But what flavor of Thunderbolt, you ask? Well, I'm glad you did. On the M4 Mac Mini, there are 3 Thunderbolt 4 ports, which are 40 gigabits per second symmetrical send-receive. On the M4 Pro, we have the introduction in Apple world of the Thunderbolt 5 port, which allows for 80, that's twice as much, gigabits per second symmetrical sender receive, or you can optionally, or you know, your devices can optionally ask for 120 gigabits per second send out of the computer and 40 gigabits per second receive back into the computer. John, why would one want to do this?
To drive displays at insane resolutions at insane refresh rates, which gets back to the thing of like, all right, now we've got a Mac with Thunderbolt 5. What kind of display could this thing drive? And Apple, I think, is being conservative in its specs based on like what macOS supports. but 120 gigabits per second with display stream compression could drive a very huge single display at very high refresh rates. It's awesome to see that, even if you can't technically do it right now because macOS doesn't support it. Thunderbolt 5 is amazing. Thunderbolt 1, 2, 3, 4, we've kind of been stuck at 40 gigabits per second. 3 to 4 didn't change the speed at all. 5 doubles the speed. 5 more than doubles the speed because you can go asymmetrical for displays. Thunderbolt 5 is amazing. I love to see it on the Mac Mini. It's a reason to get the one with the M4 Pro in it. I know it's weird that they tie the SoC to Thunderbolt 5. I think it actually has to do with the chip. Remember, the M4 is great because it's got 4 Thunderbolt controllers, but there are 4 Thunderbolt 4 controllers. The M4 Pro supports Thunderbolt 5, as you'll see with the rest of the computers. A lot of the, with all the SoC things, what the computer has is very often dictated by what's in the SoC. So M4 Pro supports Thunderbolt 5. It's great. It's very future-proof compared to Thunderbolt 4. Highly endorsed.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you get gigabit Ethernet. Oh, I'm skipping something. I'm sorry. If you wanted a Thunderbolt 5 cable, how would you go about doing that, John?
You can get it from Apple, and I'm shocked to learn that it looks like it costs the same amount as the Thunderbolt 4 cables did. It's still $70 because they have chips in the connectors and everything, and it's pretty thick and beefy looking. But yeah, you can get a 1 meter long Thunderbolt 5 cable for $70 from Apple or cheaper elsewhere. Thunderbolt 5 is awesome. I am very excited for it.
Yeah, that's really not bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money, but given what's in it, was it Mythbusters that went through this or no, it was just Adam Savage that went through this like a year ago and looked at, okay, why is the Apple cable so expensive? And it turns out for good reason. Who knew?
Yeah, they're active cables. Other people sell them as well. But active cable means there's chips in the connectors that are doing stuff as opposed to just being metal wires that connect to conductors.
Yeah, and it's not like it's the same as a $5 USB cable. Like any high data rate Thunderbolt cable that's 1 meter long is going to be probably at least $30 to $40. So for the Apple version to be 70 really is not that crazy for, you know, the Apple standard markups and quality differences.
Yep. Networking. Gigabit Ethernet is standard. You can get 10 gigabit Ethernet for $100.
Which is cool for like the mini, the really cheap desktop that you even have that option. And by the way, when you get 10 gig Ethernet, you also get 2.5, 5, like you get the standards that are in between there as well. So you can make, to Marco's earlier point, for a huge amount of money, you can make an amazing, very small server. M4 Pro, 10 gigabit Ethernet, assuming the cooling is good. If you spend the money on the huge amount of storage, this is a very small premium package for a very high price that has just incredible performance and connectivity. So despite the fact that the minis, as always, are just way more expensive than you think they should be, they are great little computers.
Yep. The rest of the networking, though, same story as before. Wi-Fi 6E, Bluetooth 5.3. Still rhymes.
Yeah. Oh, well.
All right. Display support. So you've got HDMI video output, which supports one display with up to 8K resolution at 60 hertz or 4K resolution at 240 hertz. That's applicable to both the M4 and the M4 Pro. For the M4 and only the M4, you can do DisplayPort 1.4 over USB-C. That means up to 3 displays, 2 displays up to 6K resolution at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt, and 1 display with up to 5K resolution at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt, or 4K resolution at 60 hertz over HDMI. That didn't sound right to me. Did I do that right? Is that right?
That's the way they word these things. It's so like what they're trying to say is like what combinations of displays you can use. This is copy pasted literally from Apple's website, and it's so freaking confusing. I wish they would just like have a diagram of like here are things that we can support. But I think you read it right. It's just a very confusing sentence. The point is with what you're hearing here, it's DisplayPort 1.4, which dictates a lot of what the kind of output formats are supported. And as we noted before with the iMac, where they said 120 hertz at 8K, that stat is also not present here. You see stuff like with the next one with 2 displays, they say you can do this giant sentence, 1 display with up to 5K resolution at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt, and 1 display with up to 8K resolution at 60 hertz or 4K resolution at 240 hertz over Thunderbolt or HDMI. Right? So you can get up to 240 hertz on 4K, but if you're looking for 8K 120 or 8K 240 or whatever, that's not happening on the M4-1. It's DisplayPort 1.4 only. It's Thunderbolt 4 only. That's not what you're getting with the M4, which is fine for the base model thing. And again, it's great that the M4 supports this because the M4, if you look at the controller, will also eventually save us from the MacBook Air that only supports one external display. The M4 solves that problem by having more display drivers, and the Mac Mini shows that it's capable of that.
All right. And then the M4 Pro has DisplayPort 2.1 instead of 1.4.
That's very important, because if you go look at the Wikipedia page for DisplayPort 2.1, you say, what resolutions and refresh rates does DisplayPort 2.1 support? It's a big expansion in capability. Do these Macs support all of the potential capabilities? It seems like the answer is no, but this is future-proofing. I think it's just an OS issue at this point. You get a Mac with Thunderbolt 5, and it supports DisplayPort 2.1. Presumably, if not today, then eventually you will have access to all of the resolutions and refresh rates that are supported by the hardware.
Yeah, so that means up to 3 displays with up to 6K resolution at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt or HDMI. You could also do up to 2 displays, one at 6K at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt, and one with up to 8K resolution at 60 hertz, or 4K resolution at 240 hertz over Thunderbolt or HDMI. It's pretty cool.
If only Apple sold some external monitors that refresh at the higher 60 hertz. Imagine that.
Imagine that. Then tell me about dependencies, John.
Yeah, this is, you know, so what... I didn't go through every possible configuration here, but like when you go to Apple's configurators, sometimes features are tied to particular models for a reason. You can't get Thunderbolt 5 on an M4. It doesn't support it. It's only in the M4 Pro, so that makes sense. But there are other weird dependencies. So if you get the M4 Mac Mini, your maximum is 32 gigs of RAM, and your maximum is 2 terabytes of SSD, just because Apple says so. Right? There's, you know, the RAM, maybe that's a limitation based on the SoC, on which ones they want to manufacture, but the SSD doesn't make any sense. And the M4 Pro... imagine this. It starts at 24 gigabytes of RAM. Can you imagine? Whoa. Can you imagine? How is this even happening? It starts at 20. The base RAM on the M4 Pro model is 24 gigs. It's like, it's RAM Christmas around here. It's ridiculous. unfortunately, the only other choices are 48 and 64. They skip over 32. So if you had your heart set on 32 to try to save some money on the ridiculous RAM upgrades, tough luck. You got to go all the way up to 48 or 64. And it also starts at 512 gigs SSD. Wow. I mean, obviously the M4 Pro Mac Mini starts to get real expensive real fast, but base RAM is higher and base SSD is higher. Still small, but higher. So thumbs up to that. Loving the Mac Mini base bumps. They didn't have to do that. They could have started the M4 Pro at 16. They could have started at 256. I don't know why they did this. It doesn't make any sense to me. What's going on over there at Apple? But thumbs up.
All right. And a double thumbs up to environment stuff, because this is the first carbon neutral Mac. 100% of the expected customer use electricity use is matched with low carbon electricity. 100% of manufacturing electricity for the Mac Mini is sourced from renewable energy. 50% or more of the shipping is non-air. More than 50% of it is recycled content. Of the stuff that's 100% recycled, there's aluminum in the enclosure and the thermal module stage. There's copper in the multiple PCBs, multiple thermal module components, AC inlet prongs, and multiple small parts. There's 100% recycled gold in the plating of all the Apple-designed PCBs. There's tin in the solder of multiple PCBs. Rare earth elements in all magnets are all 100% recycled. And zinc in the AC inlet prongs and multiple small parts. 80% recycled steel in multiple components, 20% or more recycled plastic in 25 components, 100% fiber-based packaging, 42% recycled content in the fiber packaging, and no established final assembly sites generate waste sent to a landfill as part of Apple's zero waste program. That is extremely freaking cool. No sarcasm.
Yeah, really.
This is what it takes to make a carbon neutral Mac. Like, they've been doing carbon neutral products. They've been moving up the scale. You're doing a watch. How much energy is that going to use over its life or whatever? Cranking up to a Mac. It's a small Mac to start, but this is the first carbon neutral Mac, and they've had to do a lot to make that happen. And to review with their carbon neutral claims, what they're saying is this thing will be carbon neutral over the expected lifetime of you using it. That means all the electricity it uses for all the time it's plugged in your house, in addition to all the manufacturing and everything. Obviously, they're buying carbon offsets to do some of this, and carbon offsets are not the greatest thing in the world, but you can look at the effort they're putting in. They are trying. They are, and because they've got that 2030 goal of carbon neutrality and everything. And so here's the first Mac, and it's the Mac Mini. So, you know, they continue to make progress, steady progress with every new product release.
And this one notably doesn't have a screen. I wonder, like, if they are including the power usage of the expected monitor situation. I can't imagine they would.
Yeah,
because
they don't know what monitor you're going to use with it. So, right. I mean, it's easy. It's the easiest one to do. It doesn't come with a screen. It doesn't even come with a keyboard and a mouse. It's just the Mac Mini and a power plug.
Yeah, but you know, this is big progress. And you know, you're right. Carbon offset credits are not, you know, amazing. But that's why Apple is also doing a lot of other stuff. Like I believe their carbon offset credits are only a small part of what they're doing with making things carbon neutral.
Yeah.
Like they're actually going and, like, you know, buying renewable energy resources and stuff like that. It's very different. So yeah. So overall, this is a great thing. They're continuing to move this forward, and this matters a lot, and it's hard. So I'm glad they're doing it.
Yep. And you can pre-order right now. Ships next week. Then Wednesday, which is today, and as we said a little while ago, it was like two hours ago, something like that. We got a very brief, a little bit of information about the existing MacBook Airs, which was a bit unexpected. But
it's RAM Christmas.
It's RAM Christmas, baby. You could see this writing on the wall once the week started. M2 and M3 MacBook Airs now start at 16 gigs RAM. Heck yeah.
All right.
When is the last time Apple has done this?
No,
take an existing Macs that they've been selling and change literally anything about them ever, let alone saying, hey, we've been the M2 and the M3, the two past models of MacBook Airs that they continue to sell. They went back and they said, you know what? Drop the 8-gig model. Make the 16-gig model. I think it's the same price as the 8-gig model was. I didn't get a chance to look.
Yeah, everything starts at the same prices. Again, it's like a $200 price drop if you were going to upgrade the RAM. It's just now you just get that. You get the 16 gigs for the base price. You still get 256 storage, but you get the 16 gigs. That's great. And especially for a low-end product, a low-end high-volume product like the MacBook Air, that is significant, and that is very impactful. So I'm very happy to see that.
And the Tim Cook way of, like, let's just keep selling a product until people don't want to buy it anymore. Like, they're still selling the M2 MacBook Air, in case you didn't know. But I think in this case, for a MacBook Air class machine, like, I'm still using an M1 in MacBook Air, right? The M2 MacBook Air is so good as a low-end laptop. Like, the M2 is not, like, holding it back because it's too slow or it's missing some features. Like, it's fine. The only thing that might be holding back an M2 is, oh, you didn't buy it with enough RAM and Apple Intelligence is choking your Mac or whatever. And so them bumping it and continuing to sell it is very Tim Cook. It's like, we should keep selling that M2 one. It's cheap for us to manufacture. We've been making it for years. People like it. The only thing that's bad about it is the SSD storage and the RAM. And they fixed the RAM situation. A 16-gig M2 MacBook Air is an amazing machine for someone to take off to school or use for their work. You could do full-fledged Xcode development on it, no problem. Like, don't think, like, oh, you can't do high-end things. You can, just a little bit slower, right?
I do.
But it will do all of them.
I can tell you, like, my like, you know, lightweight travel laptop is an M2 MacBook Air. And with 16 gigs of RAM, I have been able to do all of, you know, Overcast development. I can do it on there. I don't, you know, when I'm at my big laptop, I'd rather use that because it's faster. But if I'm, like, you know, on a trip or something, I can and do use the M2 MacBook Air, no problem. It is, you know, again, it's slower, but it's fast enough, and I can get a lot of work done on it. And certainly, if I was, you know, on a budget trying to get started with iOS development, no question, I would say get the MacBook Air. It's great, and you can totally do it.
I just can't believe this. Like, the Apple Intelligence, they must be the Apple Intelligence RAM fairy just wandering through Apple with his magic wand saying, even Macs we've been selling for years, you get more RAM too, and no increase in price. Everybody gets more RAM. And, like, I know, like, on the iOS devices, it's like they need minimum of 8 gigs of RAM. And you're like, well, why can't macOS use minimum of 8 gigs of RAM? The RAM situation on macOS is very different than on iOS and iPadOS. There is no out-of-memory killer wandering around hitting things with hammers and killing them off or whatever. There is a potentially aggressive use of swap, although they added that to, I believe, iPadOS in later releases. But anyway, it's the situation on the Macs is more of a free-for-all. Applications are free to use more RAM than they are allowed to use on those other more constrained platforms. That's why Macs probably need more than 8 when an iPad only, quote-unquote, needs 8.
Yeah, because, like,
obviously,
all these systems
could use more, but yeah.
Yeah, because, like, you might have 19 windows on your screen on the Mac, and if those windows are on your screen, the OS cannot just kill those apps in the background because they are there. You are using them. Mm-hmm. And also on the Mac, you have things like Chrome and all the different.
Chrome has a new lower memory mode for its tab things. I guess I shouldn't be defending Chrome because I have 96 gigs of RAM and don't think about RAM anymore. But, if you don't have 96 gigs of RAM, maybe use Safari.
Yeah, and also, you know, and just, you know, things like Electron apps, like, you know, like desktop apps now use so much RAM.
Slack, look at the RAM usage of Slack.
Oh my god,
insane.
Yeah, Slack, right. Discord, like all those, all the various, like, you know, Electron or similar framework apps, your desktop apps use way more RAM than you think they should. So yeah, Macs need a lot of RAM.
And the OS is not going to, like Marco's point, the OS is not going to kill them off when they're not visible, which is a thing that happens all the time on even on iPadOS. And iPadOS generally makes it so you can't actually even see that many apps or that many windows at the same time. So there's so much more constraints there. But yeah, that's why they're bumping even the MacBook Airs. They should have bumped them years ago.
Yes.
But it's amazing they're doing this. They should either stop selling them and introduce an M4 MacBook Air at 16 gigs, which is not out yet. Spoiler alert, or do what they did, which is we're going to keep selling them because we love Tim Cook, but 16 gigs ring bass everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason, whatever the reason, this is great. And yes, it is years overdue, but at least it happened. So that is great.
And they doubled it. They didn't just do like now you get, you know, 9. Right. Or 10. They could have done that incremental bump years ago, but if you're going to increase it now, 16 is the new floor. So enjoy the few brief years where the base RAM is going to be satisfactory on Apple's computers.
It's a wild, amazing time, y'all. All right. So we've got MacBook Pros. That was the big announcement for today. And the final big announcement, we've got space black and silver are the only colors because they're professional. Or something.
No, space gray though. Space gray was professional.
I guess so. RAM situation. So you've got three different tiers. You've got that, like, not really entirely a MacBook Pro, but I guess it's a MacBook Pro, which is an M4, no adjective, that can offer 16, 24, 32 gigs of RAM. What I consider to be the base of the MacBook Pros, the M4 Pro models have 24, 36, 48, 64, and 128 as options.
Starting at 24, just like the Mac Mini, M4 Pro starts at 24. That's the base RAM is 24. What is going on?
It's amazing. It's a miracle. Well, and then M4
triple
Max.
Channel memory is what's going on, but yes, go on.
Yes, I know.
And M4 Max, 36, 48, 64, or 128, baby.
That's the thing you would think they would always do, is they charge you so much for the M4 Max models that can't you just bump the base RAM? The base RAM is 36 on the M4 Max. Amazing. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And for storage, the M4 is a half a terabyte or 1 terabyte. The M4 Pro.
Are they allowed to do that? Are they allowed to sell a base model MacBook Pro with more than 256 gigs of SSD? Does Tim Cook know about this? What is happening?
Nobody knows.
Storage is 512 on an M4, which is still too little. The base should have been a terabyte like 5 years ago. But whatever. The numbers are going up. After not going up for so long, the numbers are going up. Love it. I think maybe they had done that with the M3 as well, but I'm just excited about all of these, the base numbers going up.
Yeah, it really is incredible. So for the M4 Pro, half a terabyte, 1 terabyte, 2 terabytes, 4 terabytes, M4 Max, 1, 2, 4, and 8. Those are your options.
M4 Max starts at 1 terabyte. That's where the M4 Max should start. It's also where the M4 Pro should start. It's also where the M4 should start. But anyway.
Yes. Any Mac that includes Pro in the name should start at 1 terabyte. And all the rest should start at 512.
Especially because of how inexpensive 1 terabyte of the particular SSD chips they're buying, how inexpensive that is. And like, how much cheaper is it than a 256 than a 512? It's like they're pinching so many pennies they should. But anyway. Yeah. And again, why do we care about this? Because, A, this is a portable computer, and attaching an external drive is much more of a hassle than it is on an iMac or a Mac Mini that you have on a desk. And, B, if you want any of these upgrades, they charge you fantasy prices that just you know, 8 times the real cost of them or 6 times or whatever it is. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, that's where all the money goes with these models. But, yeah, we've got all these great options, and the RAM situation is looking better.
Yep. It's really incredible. The display has a nanotexture display option. This is the first time in years that I'm aware of a MacBook Pro having any sort of like anti-glare display. I definitely checked that checkbox. Wow, let me try that again. I definitely ticked that checkbox. There we go. Many years ago, probably 10 years ago now.
It's been since the Retina came out, because the Retina never had an anti-glare option, right? I believe the last matte screen option on the MacBook Pro was, you know, like 2014-ish, like, or no, 2011-ish, before the Retinas came out.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Apple would tell you that all their displays are anti-glare, but I know what you mean. Matte finish versus anti-glare is different. There's anti-glare coating that they can put on screens when they're still glossy versus making the screens essentially textured, so it's more of a matte finish.
Yeah, and this is the first one to appear in an Apple laptop since then. Like, because it isn't like it was in the MacBook Airs or anything. Like, no, it was not available in any Apple laptop for, you know, 13 years or whatever, and now it's back, which, you know, makes sense because they just added it to the iPad Pro as well when that was last updated a couple of months ago. So,
And the iMacs got it, so they would have to put it in here.
Yeah,
it seems like again, we don't know if this is the same nanotexture process as the XDR or the one that's on the iPad. We do know those are two different processes. I would assume they're using the one on the iPad, but we'll find out when someone gets these under the microscope and or gets an Apple person to answer their question.
I mean, you know, since the XDR one costs $1,000, and the MacBook
and
Pro,
delicate.
Yeah, and the MacBook Pro one costs $150. I'm guessing it's the cheaper one of the MacBook.
Well, it's
Pro.
A smaller screen. I mean, the iMac one is $200 though for a 24-inch screen and for a 32-inch screen. Well, everything about the XDR is priced,
true,
you know, ridiculously. So, but yeah, I'm assuming the XDR one is more expensive and more fragile than the ones they would put on the consumer displays. I am personally glad that I don't prefer nanotexture, so I never have to pay for this option. But for people who do, it's great to have it as an option and a pretty reasonably priced option. You can't get a RAM upgrade for those prices, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, the one thing I'm curious about is like, and maybe this will only be known over time. You know, one of the challenges in MacBook screen management over time is trying to prevent or clean off the keyboard imprint that you get on the screen. I'm a little wary because normally I would think this would be a great option to order for me because what most of the time I'm using my laptop closed in clamshell mode with a monitor at my desk. So I don't care about like the, you know, the color and sharpness loss when I'm at my desk most of the time. But then when I go out into the world with it, then I would love to have this option. So it seems like a no-brainer, except I am a little concerned that maybe those keyboard imprints might get harder to clean off or become permanent more easily.
Yeah, the keyboard imprints, you may be thinking to yourself, why does Apple still have this problem where the keyboard puts your greasy finger grease on the screen? Why don't they just leave a gap between the keycaps and the screen? And the answer is backpacks. They do leave a gap.
Yes.
But that is a huge expanse of very thin metal and screen. And when you put any kind of pressure on a laptop, it's in the sandwich closing force, as Marco would say.
Yep.
You press the screen into the keyboard. If you want to avoid it, try not to squish your MacBook. That's hard to do. It's hard to put it in any kind of bag where it's not squished at all. But that's the problem they're facing. There's no, you know, unobtainium metal that they can put in a huge 16-inch expanse of extremely thin screen that doesn't flex at all in the middle. I'm assuming that they're using the more durable nanotexture from the iPad, which literally lets you swipe your fingers and a pencil across it. I'm assuming they're using that, and I think it won't be that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that might probably make sense. And by the way, there is a way to avoid that problem completely, which is use one of those like pieces of cloth that you stick on your keyboard when you close it up. Like that does avoid the problem. It's just a pain in the butt. But that does avoid it. But otherwise,
and you got to make sure you put the cloth in the right direction because if you turn it around, now you're pushing the grease against the thing, and it doesn't let your thing close all the way. And it's another reason not to buy laptops.
Yeah, and I was worried like if there's like a little wrinkle in it, is that going to be just enough stress to crack the screen when
crack
it closes?
Yeah.
I think the risk profile is a little bit higher with those.
Yeah. The tolerances on these computers are very tight.
Yeah.
Indeed. No, I'm very enthusiastic. I am not in the market. We'll probably get to this at the end, but I'll cut ahead. I'm not looking to buy any of these computers. I want a new MacBook Pro, but I have an M3 Max MacBook Pro. There's no reason for me to upgrade. And I also want a Mac Mini as my, you know, Plex and Channels workstation. But again, no need to upgrade. But if I were to upgrade, you bet your bottom I would tick the nanotexture display option because I occasionally use my computer outdoors. And I don't do it often enough that it's an egregious problem. But I would love to have an anti-glare screen. That sounds great. And speaking of outdoors, up to 1,000 nits in SDR. So in standard, what's the DR? I just had a brain.
Standard dynamic range. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's up from 800 was the last one, right?
This is the thing about these displays. Like it's still HDR max of 1600 nits, which it has been for years, which is also what the XDR is, right? But the user interface is not in HDR. The user interface is in quote-unquote SDR, standard dynamic range. And it's just essentially a choice, a power-saving and potentially image retention choice of when you're not in HDR mode, how bright should you get? And they've slowly been cranking up the how bright you're allowed to put it in SDR, which obviously costs battery and obviously has to be safe for the screen with image retention and stuff like that. But because they're not also raising the high dynamic range ceiling, they're narrowing the gap. So now there's a 600 nit difference between SDR and quote unquote HDR, whereas before I think they started at like 500, then 600, and now it's 1,000. But it's important if you're outdoors with a laptop and it's bright sun and you can't even see your screen, you just want to, you know, lean on that brightness button and you're going to be sacrificing battery life, but it's worth it to be able to actually see your screen and work in it. And there have been utilities you know, third-party utilities for all these Macs that have 1600 nit screens, where it's like, do you want to run your Mac UI at 1600 nits? You can. You know, Apple is not going that far, but built into the OS now, if you lean on that brightness button, you'll get up to 1000 nits.
I will say that I think we've talked about at least pieces of this story before. I've gotten into getting USB-C power cables that have like a little watt meter on them. I don't need this information, and it's the sort of thing that in one side of my mouth, I will tell you the people who have battery percentages on are monsters, and then in the other side of my mouth, I'll tell you I want to know exactly how many watts are going into my devices. It's very, very contradictory and silly, but here we are. And I will say that there's been a handful of times that I have been using my MacBook Pro while connected via one of those cables and not a MagSafe cable. And I will turn the brightness way down, and I don't remember numbers offhand, but I'll watch the wattage that it's using when it's idle go to, like, I don't know, call it 10 watts. That might be twice what it is. It might be a third what it is. But, you know, just for the sake of discussion, it'll go down to 12 or 10 watts. Then I'll go bloop, 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 and bring the brightness all the way up. And suddenly it's like 50 watts or something like that. Like,
and you're only going up to 600 nits.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or whatever the M3 Max will do. But yeah, you get the idea. It's a stark and surprising difference that brightness makes on how much power the device is using. It's very surprising. The camera is also way better. We were privately talking about this before we got on the air. We're not entirely sure what the prior situation was. We didn't have time to go look it up, but they are saying that the new camera is 12 megapixel and it is center stage supported. I could have sworn that was the case already, but it seems not. But center stage is the thing where it'll like pan and zoom and whatnot in order to get you and whoever else is in front of the camera in the frame. And so apparently that's a whole lot better.
Well,
yeah,
I would issue caution on this. Because when, you know, what we saw with the studio display, you know, and the first product to have the center stage camera, it was one of the iPads, right? The one that turned
landscape. I believe that's right, yeah.
The problem is the way center stage works is it has an ultra wide camera, and then it basically crops in a region of it that it detects that you are in. So it is a crop from a wide angle camera that you are seeing the output of. And the problem with that is that you lose a ton of resolution when you do that, because obviously you're cropping a wide-angle camera, what you get then is a blurrier picture, and typically you also get much more aggressive denoising in medium and low light. So it ends up being a far worse picture quality. So I would until these things are actually in people's hands and being reviewed, I don't know that this is going to be a meaningful upgrade in camera quality. It might just be they had to make the camera optics better just to give it enough, you know, headroom to crop it down for center stage mode and have it not look really bad like those first center stage cameras did.
Yeah, Apple's not good about like making it clear when the camera hardware has improved. They just want to tell you what it has. And the way they phrase it is like 12 MP center stage, which is like code, you know, center stage, you know, is this branded thing with the wide angle and the cropping, and 12 megapixels tells you something, but you're like, what was it 12 megapixels before? Is it different 12 megapixel sensor? Is the sensor bigger? Like, they don't really want to give you lots of technical details about the camera. So we'll find out when people get these in their hands and start testing them and do a side-by-side with the previous MacBook Pro cameras. I don't think they advertised desk view with this like they did with the iMac. The iMac, again,
no, I think they did.
Wanted to, like, did they for this
yeah.
as well?
Because yeah,
I was wondering,
sure,
like,
because then
I was wondering,
figure, like, what's the angle of the screen?
Like, is it showing your keyboard? Or I guess it's shooting past your keyboard, because the iMac one, it seems like it's, like, I wonder what the angle is, because you would want desk view to show the desk, not the trackpad, right? But some will try and find out, I guess.
Yeah, but yeah, basically, do not order this assuming the camera is better. You know, order it now if you don't care if the camera is better, because that first batch of center stage cameras were terrible. So hopefully these are at least as good as the outgoing non-center stage ones after the cropping has occurred. But honestly, I don't think that's super likely.
Yeah, Zmox in the chat says it was 1080p before. The problem with that is I think these cameras are also advertising as supporting 1080p video.
Right,
and I guess
output,
that's like, okay,
cropped
this is a,
output.
Would, the cropped yeah. output is 1080, right? But yeah, and
but what,
the sensor
what you're basically
is 12.
Getting, so, yeah, but what you're basically getting there is a sensor size shrink, because
right.
you're taking the inner crop of what's probably about the same size camera sensor. So that's probably going to mean more noise and more aggressive noise reduction, which was the biggest problem with that first batch of center stage cameras to begin with.
Apparently, Desk View is right at the top of the webpage, which I hadn't seen because, again, these computers came out just as we started recording, so forgive us for not being on top of everything, but we went as fast as we could.
Yeah, so 24 hours of battery life. I presume that's just for the M4, not the M4 Pro and M4 Max, but again,
it was just
not
in their press release.
Clear.
I'm sure there's on the tech spec page, you'll see much more granular breakdowns. But the point is, they're advertising really good battery life. What they're not doing is saying, hey, we got all these new great M4 CPUs, but sorry, you're going to have to sacrifice a ton of battery life. That's not what they're saying at all.
They're actually quoting very similar battery life between the CPUs on the compare page. It's like, you know, in the 14 inch that has the base M4, that's 24 hours, and then the M4 Pro version of that same computer is 22 hours. So they're quoting, you know, 10% difference between the two. And that might be all it is in practice. I guess we'll see. I mean, as usual with you know, any kind of modern computer battery life claim, it depends a lot on what you're doing with it. So it's not super useful to try to compare absolute numbers. It's more of a relative thing. So, yeah, maybe you can assume maybe the higher-end chips might get 10% less battery life overall doing, you know, more idle things. But once you crank it up, I'm sure they can burn through the battery way faster.
Yeah, I always assume with Apple's numbers in these modern years, just assume those numbers would be you using your computer in pretty much the most casual way. Email, web browsing, and that's it. No video conferencing, no compiling in Xcode, no, you know, audio or video editing, right? The number is for just casual, like, office-style. You can be in a word processor. You could be in a spreadsheet. You could be browsing the web. And that's what those numbers are kind of based on. So, and the more hardware they put in these, we've talked about this many times, the more hardware they put in the SoCs, the more cores, the more GPU things, the more anything that's in there. When that stuff is sitting idle, it doesn't take as much power. But when you crank all of those things up, it will destroy your battery, right? And that's what you want it to do. You want it to use the energy that's there to get your work done faster. And what it means is that you can, you know, would you rather have fewer cores and it take longer to compile your thing? Or would you rather have it use way more power for a shorter period of time? And in general, it's better to use way more power for a shorter period of time because A, it gets your job done faster, and B, sometimes that actually saves more energy. Again, don't assume if you buy this, you only have to charge your laptop once per day. That may be true on your average normal day, but if you have a very intensive day with lots of Zoom meetings even, that can really eat into the battery life. So, although I think maybe Zoom uses enough hardware acceleration that it's not that bad. Maybe it's actually just the Electron app that Zoom is built on that I assume will eat all your battery life. But anyway, battery life still looks good. And these are not, we haven't talked about it yet, we didn't mention anything about it, but I'm assuming, based on what I saw on the website, they didn't change the case. It is not a redesigned case. It is not a thinner case. It is the same one the previous M3 and M2 and M1 MacBook Pros were in, as far as I can tell.
As far as I know, that is correct.
Yeah.
Connectivity. M4 gets Thunderbolt 4 and DisplayPort 1.4. The M4 Pro and M4 Max gets Thunderbolt 5 and DisplayPort 2.1. And it still rhymes, Wi-Fi 6E and Bluetooth 5.3.
And here's where I say, okay, all the previous models, the iMac, the Mac Mini, fine. The MacBook Pro, I would have liked to seen Wi-Fi 7 and Bluetooth. And I don't know what dictates this. Is it just a Broadcom chip? I don't think this stuff is in the SoC. So it's just like, they're just, this generation, this round of revisions, the M4 ones, they're just not, this is not the year that they go to Wi-Fi 7 everywhere, right? Even though Wi-Fi 7 has been out for a while. And the only machines I'm disappointed on are the MacBook Pros, especially the high-end MacBook Pros, because that's where you want to see the stuff. Doesn't matter for the other ones, here a little disappointment. But remember, Thunderbolt 4 versus 5, if you use those ports, if you want to drive a big display at high refresh rate, or you want to have super fast storage or some kind of like RAID array of SSDs or something, go to the M4 Pro, because they're not holding it back from you. The M4 literally only supports Thunderbolt 4 and DisplayPort 1.4. So if you want Thunderbolt 5 and DisplayPort 2.1, M4 Pro and M4 Max, it's part of the SoC. You should definitely do it. It's a big upgrade if you care about those things.
All right, let's talk about display support for the M4 Max. There are up to 4 external displays, up to 3 displays with 6K resolution at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt, and 1 external display with up to 4K resolution at 144 hertz over HDMI. A secondary option you can choose is up to 3 external displays, up to two external displays with 6K at 60 hertz over Thunderbolt, and 1 with up to 8K at 60 hertz, or one with 4K at 240 hertz over HDMI. They really need a chart. I know you said that a few minutes ago. They need a darn chart.
And the M4 and the M4 Pro, I didn't put them in here because they're just the same as you heard before. Like, basically, the external display support is dictated by the SoC. So the only one you haven't heard about before is the M4 Max. For the M4 and the M4 Pro, it's the same as it was in the Mac Mini, I believe.
All right. M4 Pro is a 14-core CPU or 12-core if you elect for the binned one, and 16-core GPU or 14-core in the binned one.
And one thing with the binned ones is, I'm assuming, obviously the binned ones are cheaper, and you know they charge you a lot for the upgrade, and we really have no basis for judging the margins on the upgrade of the cores, except to say that they're probably really expensive, but who knows. Anyway, my assumption is that one of the advantages of the binned ones, aside from being cheaper, is that I assume they also use less power at maximum because you can't crank up 14 CPU cores because you literally only have 12 that work. And that may be something to consider to console you if you're like, oh, do I want to pay the extra whatever $100 to get the one with all the cores that work? Do you care about that? What difference is it going to make in your life? Are you doing jobs that take an hour and now they're going to take 40 minutes instead? Or are you doing jobs that take 3 minutes and now they're going to take 3 minutes and 5 seconds? Like, get the cheaper one with fewer cores to save you from burning your battery if you don't care about having maximum power.
The M4 Max gets 546 gigabyte per second memory, which is compared to 410 gigabytes per second on the M3 Max. This is actually the thing I think that makes me most jealous about these, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, it's not as big a jump in the M4 Pro over the M3 Pro. I don't know the percentages. Someone can do the math in the chat room, but it's not a 75% jump, but it is a jump.
Yep. 16-core CPU or 14-core binned, 12 performance cores. We're assuming 10 performance cores in the binned version, 4 efficiency cores, and Apple claims a plus 20% multi-threaded performance over M3 Max.
Seems like 4 efficiency cores is what Apple thinks is sufficient for just right, because the efficiency cores are doing like the stuff that's not very intensive, low priority stuff in the background. Just the Apple's efficiency cores are actually fairly powerful these days. And they gave you 6 of them at one point, but now with the Pro and the Max chips, it's 4 efficiency cores for both of them, and all they just keep doing is giving you more and more of those power cores. And yeah, so this one has 12 power cores, 12 performance cores, or 10 in the binned version. That's a lot of very powerful cores. This is a big chip.
Yep, and then 40-core GPU or 32-core in the binned version, and again, about 20% GPU improvement, performance improvement over the M3 Max. You can pre-order today. They ship November 8th. Environment, 100% recycled aluminum in the enclosure, 100% recycled rare earth elements in all the magnets, 100% recycled tin, soldering, gold plating, and copper in multiple printed circuit boards. And the packaging for the 14-inch MacBook Pro is now entirely fiber-based, joining the 16-inch MacBook Pro and bringing Apple closer to its goal to remove plastic from its packaging by 2025.
I hope there's not anything we missed on these MacBook Pros. Again, they were released like as we started recording, so the timing wasn't perfect for us. But overall, I it's hard for me not to get distracted by the 16 gigs of RAM on the MacBook Air, because selfishly, from my perspective, it makes my life so much easier when recommending a computer for someone to buy, because the answer is always they probably want a laptop. They should just get the MacBook Air, and now I don't have to give them a speech about why it's really important for them to spend $200 on another 8 gigs of RAM. I could just tell them to get the base, maybe check in with them about how much stuff they have, right? But again, with cloud storage and everything, a lot of people can actually get by with 256, especially on a low-end thing. And then the MacBook Pros, clean upgrade. They took the M3 ones, they put M4 in them, and guess what? The M4 SoCs, the M4 line is good. That we heard the rumors months ago that Apple is going to put every one of its Macs on the M4, which may not sound exciting. Like, don't they always do that? The answer is no, they don't always do that. Sometimes Macs get left behind. The poor Mac Studio and Mac Pro still have the M2 in them. The MacBook Air still has the M3 in them. But eventually, there will come a time when the top-end products that Apple sells in all of its categories will have M4 something in them. The plain M4 is an amazing chip, amazing single-core performance. It made up for a lot of the problems of the M3, especially the dual display support and everything. M4 Pro takes a different approach than the M3 Pro. Seems like a huge jump. Great chip. And the M4 Max is exactly what you would think it would be. It is not the same as the M4 Pro. As far as I know, we'll look at the die shots to see if the Pro and the Max are just shrunken versions of each other. But anyway, the M4 Max has got more stuff. Pro starting at higher base RAM than the M4, and the Max starting at higher base RAM still is great. This is a great update to a bunch of Macs that the rumors are they might be introducing new slim versions of these, and there'll be other potential, you know, it's there's uncertainty in the future of this one. They go to the M4, or the M5, or the M6, maybe they'll redesign the cases, maybe they'll take different choices, maybe they'll take away the SD card. This is not that. This is the MacBook Pros that you've known and loved with what I think is the best, obviously, it's the best M series set of chips they've made, but I think the trade-offs from looking at the how they've arranged these things, the trade-offs are great for these, and I really do think the fact that this is the year Thunderbolt 5 starts rolling out really makes the M4 Pro and M4 Max very attractive to people who care at all about external peripheral speed or future-proofing for really high resolution, really high refresh rate monitors.
Yeah, but overall, yeah. Like, I love this lineup now. Like, this is so solid because, as John said, like, you don't have to try to steer people away from the 8 gig base models anymore. The only thing I would strongly recommend pushing people to 512. Now that it's, you know, only a $200 upgrade that I'm pushing for instead of a $400 upgrade that it used to be, maybe it'll be a little bit easier. Like, to me, if you're going to do any kind of, like, you know, substantial power usage at all on one of these laptops, the one to get, I think, is either at the low end, get the MacBook Air, but they have like another tier up that has 16/512 for $1,300. Get that one. That's the new budget model for people who care about computers. $1,300 MacBook Air with 512. And then, honestly, if you want, like, you know, the MacBook Pro features and experience, you know, John's right that if you care about things like display future proofing and everything, Thunderbolt 5 is a big deal. For most of us, that's not usually the case. One of the best deals typically in Apple's lineup in terms of, you know, bang for the buck that you get has historically always been the base model of the biggest laptop. You know, so it used to be the old 15-inch MacBook Pro and PowerBook. Now it's the 16-inch MacBook Pro. And the base model 16-inch has, for $2,500, which is around where it has been for quite some time, $2,500, you get the best screen, you get the best speakers, you get the best microphones, like all that other stuff that is the best in the MacBook Pro. You get all that, and then that's the M4 Pro with 24 gigs now and 512 gigs as the base. That's a really great all-around computer. That can do pretty much everything most people need to do. Now, yes, if you spec it up, you can get more RAM, you can get more disk, whatever. You can always do that. You can go up to $7,000 easily with this thing. But if what you're looking for is like best bang for the buck, I think it's the Air and the base model 16-inch.
And this is also the last 1 or 2 years where we can not yell at the MacBook Air for not having an HDR screen. And that's allowing for Apple being behind. It's the thing that people, I think, underestimate about the Pros is that screen. The screen on the MacBook Pros has been great. Having HDR, I think, is just... It's increasingly important in the Apple world because all their phones take HDR pictures, right? You really want to see them in full HDR on your screen.
Yeah.
And the laptop screens are great. MacBook Air, who knows? Maybe the M4 MacBook Air will have an HDR screen. We'll find out. But right now, they don't. And so people wonder, hey, should I get a really specced up MacBook Air or should I get the base model M4 MacBook Pro? What's the difference? Do I care about the Pro? And I was like, the main thing that you will probably care about is the screen. You will notice the screen. When you look at your pictures on the screen, you will notice. Most of the time, people don't notice anything about the screen. They're like, oh, viewing angles, color saturation, no one is ever going to notice that. But when they pull up a picture they took on their iPhone in HDR, it looks different and in a way that people will notice. Not even just side by side. Just bring up the Photos app and bring up an HDR picture and people will go, whoa, and their eyes, they'll, you know, like, it makes a difference. So I hope, just like this year, we have all risen up to 16 gigs RAM base in the Apple world. Someday, the promised land where every Mac will have an HDR capable screen with 120 hertz refresh rate. We're a long way from there, but we can get there. I believe, and you're not given I believe speech, Martin Luther King, I believe speech, that we can get every Apple device. I mean, rumor is the iPhone 17 is going to be 120 hertz across the whole, like, even the non-pro models and everything. So the phones will probably get there first because the screens are smaller. But right now, XDR, 60 hertz. Studio Display, 60 hertz. All of the non-MacBook Pro screens, 60 hertz. Like, the iMac screen, 60 hertz. No HDR. Like, we need to get there. That's another mountain we have to climb. But for right now, the MacBook Pros have it. They've always had it. Those screens are great. That is a reason to consider even the basest of base model MacBook Pro if you care about HDR at all.
Yeah, and also, and when you go up to the ones that have the Pro or Max chips, you also get more ports. You get ports on both sides. You get the SD card. You get all these upgrades to the MacBook Pro that are just kind of, you know, better for convenience or connectivity or, you know, just quality of life. So yeah, if you can swing the MacBook Pro, it's a great buy. And now the MacBook Air is also a great buy. Again, just get 512, please, for the love of God. Especially if you think like, oh, I need something for Xcode. You definitely want a lot of storage if you're going to be using Xcode. Just you know, do not get the 256. I don't care. If you're like a young person, you're like, I want to get into coding, but I don't need storage. I stream all my music. I have my cloud photos. Trust me, Xcode eats disk space like crazy. You need the 512 if you're doing any kind of Xcode work at all. But yeah, these are great products all around. I'm very happy to see them.
Yeah, and in terms of eating space, like I said, with a iMac or a Mac Mini, you can just attach a very fast SSD to one of those Thunderbolt ports and give yourself more storage. It's the advantage of having a desktop. With a laptop, you are not going to want to do that. You're not going to want to do the Varco thing where you Velcro an SSD to the back. Like, you can, but it's very awkward. And when you run out of space, A, macOS gets very angry, and B, you will get very angry. Because you'll feel like, my computer is full. Do I need a new computer now? It's not that easy to deal with that. What should I delete? Should I delete anything? Am I making a mistake by deleting precious memories of my children to fit within the stupid 256 gig SSD? Or, like, should I delete some SDKs that I'm not using? Or did I just screw up my build? Or I shouldn't have deleted that one, or I need to re-download it? Like, when you fill your disk, it's a bad situation on portable computers or devices, on your phone or your laptop. And, yeah, so maybe you can fit within 256, like... Look into your heart, look at your actual computer, see how much storage you're actually using, see what you actually can fit within. But this is the next bottleneck. I said every time you remove a bottleneck, the next one just rises to the surface as the number one. Number one new bottleneck on base model Macs, 256 gig SSD.
Yeah, but don't let us poo-poo this entire week of incredible releases. Like, this is an incredible, and we've said this consistently for years, it's an incredible time to be a fan of the Mac, and it just keeps getting better and better. And I'm really, really pleased that I suffered through the dark ages of the late teens in order to reap the rewards here in the early 20s. It's been an incredible, phenomenal time to be a fan of the Mac, and I hope it continues. I mean, Apple it's not perfect, but darned if they're not firing on almost every cylinder. So yeah. Really, really good work this week.
Yeah, this is an above average year for upgrades, above average, easily above. And these were already great computers. Like, yeah, their laptops were already really good, and this is an above average. If you're wondering, we're always saying, like, when is the right time to buy? When are they the good computers? These, again, we're not going to say right now because people haven't tested them. For all we know, they thermally throttle and blow up and catch fire or something, but they probably don't, right? But wait, read, see the actual reviews of people who get these in their hands. Wait for Marco to buy one, have you tell you about it, right? This is from looking at the specs, this is an above average year of updates in terms of how much better they are than the ones before. And the ones before were already really good.
Yep.
All right, we done?
Yeah.
All right, thank you to our sponsors this week, Tip Top, Uncommon Goods, and 1Password Extended Access Manager. And thank you to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atv.fm/join. One of the perks of ATB membership is overtime, in addition to our cool merch discount, which we mentioned earlier. So you might want to join just for that. But you also get overtime. This is our bonus topic every week. This week, overtime is about the recent news on the security research that's been done with Apple's private cloud compute that they are debuting now. So there's been some security research updates, and we're going to talk about those in overtime. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
I feel like we have like 7 after shows with lawnmowers. We should just put a discussion with a leaf blower noise behind us as the after show.
I caved. I got a Mac Mini.
You couldn't even make it through the recording.
Jesus.
No,
what the hell for?
I got it yesterday.
They're adorable. That's why.
They're adorable.
No, I told you last week. Have you heard the show, Casey? I told you last week I was buying one. And why? I'm buying it to replace my one ancient and recent but broken Synologies.
Yes, sorry. I blocked it from my memory because I was so sad at the anti-Synology snark, but here we are. No, yes. Oh, well, I'm glad. What did you get then?
I got close to the base. The only thing I touched was I went to 512 and I went to the 10 gig Ethernet, but otherwise it's the base.
Do you have 10 gig Ethernet in the house, or is that just future-proofing?
I have 10 gig wiring in the walls now, and I'm starting, like, I have some of the ports, I think, on my big router are 10 gig compatible, but I think only the WAN ports or something. So I'm starting to lay the groundwork for that, and I intend to keep this thing for a long time, and it was only like $100 or something, $150. So I'll upgrade that, and then that gives me a reason to start, maybe look at upgrading, my Thunderbolt dock that I have for my MacBook Pro. Maybe that would be easy to get a 10 gig Ethernet situation going on there. And then
it isn't, as far as I'm aware. Like, you can get 10 gig Ethernet adapters, but to my knowledge, there are no like docking station style things that have 10 gig Ethernet. So like my beloved CalDigit TS4 has 2.5 gig as an example.
Oh, Thunderbolt 5 docking stations probably will.
Yeah, and that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, I should clarify. I would, even just going to 2.5 would be a substantial upgrade from what I have now. And since I'm planning on using this Mac Mini basically as a fancy NAS for the most part, I do want to start experimenting on it with things like, running background jobs for Overcast. So if I wanted to start trying to transcribe podcasts in mass. Obviously, the way to do that correctly is in a data center, but I can start experimenting with it in my house and then,
Or one Mac Mini. Yeah, it's either a data center full of M2 Ultras right. or one Mac Mini in a closet. Where is this one going to be, by the way?
Directly under a waterfall outside.
Mm-hmm. No. Oh, it's like me.
Yeah. Or on Casey's desk.
Yeah, either one. It's equally dangerous.
At least the waterfall's not sticky.
Also fair. Well, I'm excited for your purchase. What does it come on Friday then, as far as you know?
Yeah, like next week. Yeah.
A week from Friday.
Yeah, day one.
The reason I asked where you were going to put it is because I was wondering if you'd have an assessment of the fan noise, but if it's in a closet, you probably won't notice.
It's probably going to be in my garage. I have a...
It's not an outdoor computer.
Well, the garage is... Our new garage is semi-conditioned. It is fully insulated, and it has a split unit to keep it from reaching temperature extremes. In either direction, so it is semi-conditioned and mostly fine. So I'm gonna try it.
We
there.
We know about your kink. It's fine, Marco.
Oh my god,
he likes to put electronic equipment outdoors.
It's not outdoors.
Semi outdoors.
We're just gonna move right along. Why did you put a mini split in the garage? Like, what were you trying to guard
so
against?
So it'd be semi-conditioned.
Well, no, I understand
it actually
that. But like,
was,
but
yeah,
why?
So it because it was okay. The way Long Island works. Everyone like knows a guy, and when you ask a contractor like, hey, can we install a split in this room, sometimes what happens is he comes back and he's like, hey, I got a unit, it's no more money, but there's one that has two heads, do you want it? And like, it's no more money, really? Like, yeah, I got it, it's ready to go right now. Okay, sure, we can put the second head in the garage. That's what happened. There was a room next to the garage that, a regular room that needed a split installed in it, so we put one there. And they were like, we could do it right here for no extra money. We'll put one in the garage, too. And I said, fine, whatever. They're independently
controlled. You can't afford not to put one there.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, so I don't, like, you know, if it, like in the summertime, we were running it in dehumidify mode. You know, like, so it's kind of nice to have certain options like that. So it's fine. I don't intend to ever use it aggressively, but it's nice for extremes.
Well, you need it to keep your Mac Mini comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in full support of this idea. So my parents in their house, which Marco briefly saw many years ago now, but they have a 3-bay garage that the ceiling is like 20 feet in it or something like that. It's an absurd amount of space. And when our kids were much littler, they wanted to have like an extended family thing. Like it was Christmas or Hanukkah or something. I forget exactly what it was specifically, but they realized that, well, this is going to be tough because the very young kids are going to wake up if they hear us all hooping and hollering and whatnot. And it's wintertime, so we can't exactly just go outside.
Hooping and hollering and whatnot might be the most Southern thing you've ever said.
Well, you never know what y'all get into, but one way or another, what Dad ended up doing was putting a single mini split in this very, very large garage, and that's what he would set up, just folding tables and like chairs and whatnot in there, and mom and dad, me and my brothers and family and whatnot would all chill in there, and it was great because we were far enough removed from the interior of the house that the hoot nanny wasn't heard inside, and we could still live in there, not live, but be in a conditioned space. So I've been wanting to find a reason to do it in my house, but we are never in the garage for any long duration of time. So I haven't done it because there's no need for it whatsoever, but I kind of want to just in principle.
Well, your cars are in there, right? You keep your cars cooler, so when you get in, I guess you can turn them on remotely and cool them off, but still, like, I just feel like cars, especially in the South, are places that are really hot, where just stuff, the interior of your car baking at, like, over 100 degrees or 120 degrees
is not bad because it's not in the sun. So the hood might be in the sun because we back into the garage because that's who we are. So the hood might be in the sun, but not the passenger compartment.
I guess it's not in direct sunlight, but still, right. Like, if it's not a conditioned space, it's just it's an enclosed space in the summer. I can imagine that getting hot.
I mean, they're
designed actually not as bad
as
you think. Yeah, it's not as bad as you think.
Yeah,
it's
worse. I know they're designed for it. I just feel bad for the car.
It's much worse in the winter. For the people.
For the machine, yeah. I mean, like, all those glues and materials that are made to withstand 170 degrees without degrading too much. We've all seen old cars where those dashboards, they put up a good fight, but, you know, a decade they start to fall apart. And if you keep them, if you don't, expose them to extremes of temperature, they will be nicer for longer.
That is very true. But no, it's not nearly as bad as you think around where we are anyway. The worst part, at least for people anyway, is during the winter, because it will still be properly cold out there in the mornings. And so Aaron's car, I can run on electricity if it's plugged into the house. It'll warm itself up over the span of a half an hour if I want it to. Or I can actually start the gasoline engine as long as the garage door is open.
Is this the garage where your water heater is?
Yes.
So you're worried it's getting so cold in there. It seems like it's probably not getting that cold.
It's no, I mean, compared to what
your
you
water
two are
heater
used to,
is in there.
Compared to what you two are used to, it's not that
well,
bad.
Actually,
but...
so I have a heat pump hybrid water heater now. So what it does is it steals heat from the garage to heat the water, which means it air conditions the garage. So I actually have to be careful, you know, whatever choices I make with the split unit, that I'm not basically just undoing my energy savings.
That's funny. That's wild. But yeah, so I can run Aaron's car if it's plugged in for, you know, like 20, 30 minutes and warm it up. However, you and I suffer from the same problem with our cars insofar as if I were to turn on my car remotely, it would drive itself through the front of the garage. So that's not a possibility. Unless you don't park your cars in gear, John, in which case we have a whole new world of things to discuss.
I don't park my car in the garage. That's what the problem is.
Well, yeah, you guys need EVs. Like this
car was
this
not
totally
in gear.
This totally solves the problem.
Rolling into the street is what it would be doing.
Yeah. All right, titles. Let's see. Get to the right tab. That is not it. Not a lot of titles today. I guess people are like working and stuff.
There was, it's got to be Ram Christmas, right?
I mean, yeah, it's got to be Ram Christmas, and we're saved by the fact that, you know, we're recording at an odd time, not many suggestions.
Yeah,
Ram
but
Christmas.
That's the clear
or you could do
winner,
it's Ram Christmas or just plain old Ram Christmas, but
I think Ram Christmas is better.
Yeah, Ram.
All caps Ram, Casey.
Yes, thank you. Good God, man.
It's not a verb.
Do I need to start sending pull requests for like an all caps keyword list?
Sure, feel free. I am happy to receive
you
that pull
request. Why don't you have John take over the CMS that you run to?
I should.
Yeah, just write a showbot into the ATP CMS.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, either that or quick.
What normally happens is I take over something that someone's already written and have to deal with all the problems that come with it. So that's how it works.
Well, just think, you can bring your own set of problems to this problem.
Take over Casey's showbot and add that custom. Don't you still have to reboot this sometimes? I don't like that.
No,
isn't it WebSockets?
It is, but no, if it's rebooting, it's rebooting itself, and I wrote a script for it so long ago, I've forgotten.
That's right,
which
you're automatic kicking
machine. Which could be yesterday. no, as far as I recall, no, it's not rebooting itself at all.
All right. Thank you, live people, for listening.
Oh, next week, normal time, right? What is that, the 6th?
Yeah.
Can I operate a calendar?
Yes, next week, normal time.
Yes, normal time. Okay. All right. Goodbye, live people.
Bye, live people.